It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 473 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, December 11, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. Had a chance to see John Cena on SNL last night. Thought he did a good job. I had forgotten how unfunny SNL has become when they're not covering politics. So that was a stark reminder for me. But I thought Cena did a good job overall. I thought he was pretty funny. Want to give a shout out to Dennis. I don't have a last name, but Dennis is a guy I saw at the gym wearing the Bullet Club hat. He two-sweeted me when I mentioned the hat. I did not see that coming. And then he asked me if I went to Final Battle, and I said no. And this guy, who I don't even know, he guilt-tripped me. He told me I missed a hell of a show. It sounds like it. He's not the only one who has told me that. Anyway, if you would like to support the podcast, we'll run through this real quick. You can still cash in on your free book using your Audible trial, audibletrial.com/solomonster. That's our custom URL just for you guys. If you punch that in, go through the sign-up process, you can sign up for a 30-day trial of the Audible service between now and the end of the year. And even if you get to the point in the trial, it's not quite 30 days yet, you want to cancel the trial, you get to cash in one free audiobook no matter what. And a lot of you recently have cashed in on the death of WCW, which is just new. Only in the last month or two has that been added to the Audible lineup. It's a funny book. It is a sad book. But it is a very informative book. If you are interested in finding out about the ups and the very many downs of WCW, especially in the dying days, and why, in fact, WCW died, that is a good book to pick up. And also, you've got a ton of other wrestling books on there. If you want to check out Bob Holly's story, Hulk Hogan, Brock Lesnar, Chris Jericho, Daniel Bryan, tons and tons of books and non-wrestling books. But you got to use our link to sign up for the trial. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Get in on that before the year is up. Also, don't forget we have a brand new shirt up in our Pro Wrestling Tee store. The Your Title Belt is Made of Leather, You're Not a Real Vegan. Play off the Daniel Bryan soundbite in our intro. You can pick that up in black or white. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off is the official URL for our store. And also, if you want to become a PayPal VIP, you may do so by making a donation on thesolomonster.com at any time. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on this podcast. And I would like to say thank you to... we've had a lot of people who have donated consistently throughout the year. I can't even express in words how much I appreciate that. To see that kind of support is really cool. But even if you're only somebody who donates every now and then or once or what have you, I appreciate all you guys. So I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, one of our loyal listeners. Deadpool James Herrera, another one. Eugene Crazy Eyes Morgan, who I haven't heard from in a year, but he donated this week. So thank you to Crazy Eyes. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. Hot Stuff Hector Pena. Out of Control Cody Thomas. The Marietta Mauler Alexandru Mata. Trevon the Cannon Clark. Kind of a Big Deal Corey Blake. Nemesis Nathan Moyers. Massgrave Micah Harshaw. The Montreal Mauler Patrick Pacheco. The Singapore Slayer Hazik Muhammad. Maverick Max Springer. Ryan the Dagger McTaggart and his son Money Maxwell McTaggart. I want to say happy 4th birthday to Money Max. Remember when I was 4 years... Actually, I don't remember when I was 4 years old because I was 4. The California Kid Gabriel Solis, who also celebrated a birthday this week, so happy birthday, Gabe. And the Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. Thank you to everybody who donated. Again, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com anytime you'd like to. We're heading into the holidays. We're heading into the end of the year here. So if you want to get those shout-outs in, that is the place to go to do that. We have a lot to get to this week. I also am going to be doing... This is the first time I've ever done this on the show. This is not part of an ad deal or anything like that, at least not yet. But I'm going to be doing an unboxing. You know, we hear about these wrestling crates all the time, and there's different services. Well, the folks over at WrestleCrate UK were kind enough to send one over to me just this past week. I received it, flew it over, I guess, from overseas. It is sitting here. I have resisted the urge to open it, figuring it would be kind of fun to take a few minutes. We'll do that in the middle of the show. I will open the box. I will open the crate, and I have no idea what to expect because I've never done one of these before. It's not like a WWE crate, although there may be WWE stuff inside. I'm not sure if it's just, you know, UK independent promotions or what have you. So that'll be interesting. We'll open that crate up a little bit later on in the show, answer your questions as always, and a ton more. But first, if you missed it, there was a pay-per-view last weekend. There's a pay-per-view almost every weekend now. TLC, if you missed it, I have a full review over half an hour of the TLC pay-per-view, which turned out to be one of the better pay-per-views of the year. Could turn out to be the sleeper show of the year based on these poll results. Overwhelming success in our Twitter poll. Over 2,100 votes. 86% of you voted thumbs up. Only 14% thumbs down. And I think that has to be, if that's not the best ratio for a WWE pay-per-view this year, then it has to be among the top two or three. Definitely one of the better shows of the year. The finish, if you listen to this podcast, it should have come as no surprise. I was talking about this for probably a month or more that I saw from a mile away. I saw that 2012 TLC pay-per-view finish coming, what they did with John Cena and Dolph Ziggler and AJ Lee, and they did the exact same thing here with James Ellsworth. Although they did not follow through on Ellsworth doing the full turn and being the lackey for AJ Styles and going full heel, that's what I was kind of hoping they would do. They kind of half-assed it. They kind of turned him but didn't turn him, and I don't know. We've seen them do this with people before, and it never really works. But they did have him tip over the ladder with Dean Ambrose on it, just like they did in 2012. And he did assist AJ Styles and help AJ retain the championship in what was an outstanding main event. If you did not watch it, I'm sure most of you by now have watched the match or have made up your mind if you're going to watch it or not. But I would encourage you to go back and watch it. If you didn't, it was a great match. AJ, unfortunately, besides suffering a wardrobe malfunction with a literal hole in his ass, he suffered a minor ankle injury. I think it was on that crazy 450 springboard table spot. And so he hurt his ankle, and he shouldn't be out very long. He may well be back in action this week. I'm not sure. It's probably one of those things where he's out for a week or two. But it's not broken or fractured or I don't know if it's sprained. I don't know what the deal is, but he should be back very soon. You know, he doesn't need surgery or anything like that, which is, thank God. I mean, can you imagine if AJ Styles broke or fractured something right now and had to be out for months on end and miss WrestleMania, and just as important as he's been to that SmackDown brand, what a disaster that would be. I mean, if I'm WWE and something like that happened, I fast track Samoa Joe up tomorrow. I mean, I figure they're saving Joe for the Royal Rumble, but if I'm them, if someone like AJ goes down, I mean, that guy's on the roster tomorrow. So they better hope that that does not happen. But I do think it just goes to show you how important AJ really is to that brand. You know, if you look at the lineups and everything on that SmackDown brand without him, it's definitely a weaker show. There's no doubt about it. And so the sooner they get him back in the ring, the better. But I also want to just follow up on something that I did discuss in that review on YouTube, which again, I encourage you all to go and check out. And if you want to stream it or download it, remember the link is always in the video description, the MP3 of these reviews. But I talked about Justin Labar. Justin Labar had, during the pay-per-view, tweeted some concern about Mauro Ranallo's status in the company as the voice of SmackDown and how his days might be numbered. He was hearing things, and just the nature of them adding Tom Phillips the way they have, kind of out of nowhere, to the SmackDown announce team. It almost seems like he's being groomed, perhaps, to take over as the lead announcer at some point. And other sites picked up on Justin's concern. It became a news item, more so than just one person voicing concern. It got picked up, and this greatly upset Mauro Ranallo. He lashed out on Twitter. He vehemently denied the rumors. He said he's got years left on his WWE contract, which I'm sure he does. I mean, that doesn't mean that they can't take him off SmackDown and have him doing something else. But he vehemently denied this. And it sounds like it just might have been more concern on one person's part than any sort of statement of fact. But you know how these things can kind of take on a life of their own on the internet. And but hey, it does feel like they're priming for something with Tom Phillips. I mean, I don't know if it is for him to eventually take over the mantle as the lead announcer or not, but they're definitely preparing for something. What that is, I don't know. Hopefully it's not Mauro's spot. He certainly doesn't seem to think it is. But then again, in a situation like that, he probably would be the last person to know. Now, I like Tom. I don't hate Tom Phillips. I like him. I enjoy his work on NXT. I like the chemistry he has with Corey Graves. But Mauro Ranallo, and I know some of you are not big fans of his. You think he's very over the top with his calls, Mamma Mia, and all these different things. I like the guy. I think he's a really, really good announcer. He has not yet been completely, what's the word? I would say WWE-ized. I just created a phrase. He still kind of has a personality of his own and a style all unto his own, which I like. I appreciate that. And also, he's just a good announcer. You know, he's just a good announcer. If he wasn't, he would not be... Look, he's juggling multiple announce jobs in wrestling and MMA right now. If he wasn't a good announcer, believe me, people would not be knocking on his door. But I just wanted to address that here because, you know, Mauro was very, very upset about all the rumors and he tried to put them to rest. So I just wanted to mention that here. There was other news coming out of TLC last weekend as far as announcers go, and that included the pre-show. If you remember the pre-show panels, typically they would have Renee Young and Booker T, and then Jerry Lawler and Lita would round them out. Once they moved Lawler off of SmackDown, he became the pre-show guy. And there is a new format going forward. They have shaken things up a bit. They're going to be bringing in more well-known, established media personalities and media types to come in to be kind of like guest analysts on the pre-shows, radio hosts, podcasters, YouTube personalities and such. I think they should totally get the Hot Tub Review guy on one of their shows soon. They have Peter Rosenberg on for TLC. The rumor is that Sam Roberts, I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer they would have Sam Roberts on. They've already got something of a relationship with him. He's been a talking head on some network specials and stuff. I've seen him pop up here and there. And he's had WWE people on his radio show quite a bit. So I would expect him to be on there soon enough. I was thinking about this, you know, when I heard that it could involve podcasters and YouTubers. If they do have John Cena chasing title number 16 at WrestleMania, like I think they will, they ought to try to get that Bruce Blitz guy on there just to talk about it. All right. They could lob some questions his way. Man, what do you think about John Cena going after title number 16? All right. That'd be amusing. If nothing else, I think that would be amusing to watch. They may not think so, but I do. Two people you won't be seeing, though, on the pre-shows anymore are Jerry Lawler and Lita. Lawler is no longer a regular in the company. They apparently converted his full-time deal over to a Legends contract, which pays a lot less than what Lawler was reported to have been making before, which was in the six figures. Instead, he is now under that Legends deal, and so I think he's already made the announcement he's going to be doing one of these spoken word, one-man shows that we've seen other people do that. William Regal's done it, Jake Roberts has done it, Jim Ross has done it, and now Lawler's going to get in on that too. They may still be using him to host the Hall of Fame each year, but otherwise, we're not going to be seeing much of Lawler on WWE television anymore. And in a lot of ways, it's the end of an era. I mean, it was the end of an era when they took him off commentary, but now that he's really gone, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's finished. I mean, aside from those, what was it, 9 months or 10 months, I guess, in 2001 when he left the company, Lawler has been with them full-time for, you know, 24 years, right? He made his debut in 92 on Primetime Wrestling, and he's pretty much been with them ever since. And so on screen, he's been with them for 24 years. I mean, he lasted longer than Jim Ross did. Jim Ross didn't debut until 93. And Jim Ross, they got rid of him a long time ago. You know, he got demoted to SmackDown. I mean, his pay may have stayed the same, but make no mistake, when he got moved to SmackDown, that was a demotion. And I thought when he did get moved over to SmackDown, and I wasn't even watching SmackDown every week back then. This was before the brand split, but when I would watch, he finally, we started to see the heel Jerry Lawler again, and all of a sudden it kind of reinvigorated him. And it's, I mean, I don't want to say that it was the Lawler of, you know, 1990, whatever, but he did seem like he had this life and energy that he just didn't have on Raw. Like, he just didn't seem to give a shit on Raw. He was coasting, and he didn't really add anything anymore. And now on SmackDown with Mauro, it was almost that classic old school heel, you know, heel babyface announcer dynamic where he started to rag on the babyfaces, and he would rag on Mauro, and he would mispronounce his name. And it was kind of nice to see the old Jerry Lawler come out a little bit. And then they broke him up naturally. When something starts to work, you break it up. And I guess because the world needed JBL and David Otunga on SmackDown. We just could not live without them. And so they moved Lawler to the pre-shows, and I watched some of those pre-shows. Lawler would get people's names wrong. He would mix up their names and stuff. And I saw him pop up on a bunch of Botchamania videos recently because of that. He just didn't seem to care. He just did not seem to care. He was there to collect a paycheck, and that was it. So I think he was already mentally checked out. But now they've made it official, and the King is no more. Lita is a surprise in that she was apparently completely let go, just gone. And I don't know if she's also under a Legends deal or not, but she is apparently just completely gone, out of the picture. It seemed like she was back in their good graces. She was doing the pre-shows for all the pay-per-views. She was the one they chose to introduce the new Women's Championship in the ring at WrestleMania this year. So I don't know what happened. I mean, honestly, as much as Lawler seemed checked out on those pre-shows, Lita wasn't very good either. She really wasn't. She was very awkward on those shows, to the point where it became a running joke that, you know, oh, she's under the influence on the air. I mean, there were always rumors about that. And I don't know if they were always meant to be in jest or if they were legit or what was going on there. But that was certainly, you know, a reputation that she had built up. And she just wasn't very good in the role. You know, maybe it's just a public speaking thing. I don't know, but it never really seemed like a good fit for her. So I guess in that respect, it shouldn't be surprising, but it kind of came out of nowhere, so it is. And so she's gone, and we'll see who they bring in. Again, I think Sam Roberts will pop up, and maybe they'll take my couple of suggestions there on people to bring in, but I guess we'll see going forward who they pick. According to PW Insider, Mickie James is signed, sealed, and delivered, and back in the fold with WWE. She was said to have been offered a 3-year contract, and she's going to be starting on the SmackDown brand coming up in January. To me, this seemed like a no-brainer after her match with Asuka at TakeOver. They had a really good match. She looked like she hadn't skipped a beat. She looked great. Got a great reaction. People still remembered her. She can still go. So why not? Why not bring her in? She's also, you know, she's a good veteran presence to have on that roster. I mean, you just think of some of the matchups on that SmackDown brand. Mickie against Becky. Mickie against Alexa. Even Mickie and Nikki. Mickie and Nikki. I just realized it rhymes. And Mickie, you know, Mickie and Nikki would be interesting considering the whole John Cena dynamic. You know, I don't know if they would want to play off the history there. Because Mickie James and John Cena have a history that played a role, I think, in her no longer being with the company many years ago. And I think if they probably would not want to play off of it, and Cena probably would not want them to play off of it. But if they did, I think that could make for some very interesting television. And also, and you know, it's funny I mentioned that, because if she goes to SmackDown, you've also got the Spirit Squad. They've been back. I don't think they've been offered a full-time deal. So, I mean, who knows if they'll ever even be back on TV now, but they've been making appearances. And, you know, Kenny Dykstra kind of fits into that whole dynamic too, because he used to be with Mickie, and Mickie was into Cena, and it was a whole sordid thing, and it led to bad times for Kenny, and then he was, you know, booted from the company, and apparently they'll all kind of be part of this SmackDown brand. I think there's definitely a storyline in there somewhere with some reality to it if they want to play off it. Linda McMahon was in the news this week. Linda McMahon has been tapped by Donald Trump to head up the U.S. Small Business Administration, the SBA. Her job will be to help small businesses across the country to grow and succeed. Hopefully they're more of a success than her own Senate campaigns. I was reading one article that said that she was picked because of her success in running WWE as a small business and turning it into a global empire. It's like, she was chosen because she donated $7 million to a Trump super PAC. Trust me, that's the only reason she got this spot. But I mean, I guess the other thing makes for a much nicer story. It's just comical to me. Now, originally it was $6 million. She had donated $6 million or $6.5 million to a Trump super PAC in support of his campaign. We found out this week that there was another million that came in the last week or two of the campaign. So it brings the total donated on her part to $7 million. So for months, it's funny, you know, for months in this election, we heard about pay for play, pay for play. I guess some things never change. But hey, Linda seems like a very nice lady. Truth be told, she's one of the more sane people that Trump has picked or talked about picking so far for his cabinet posts. So congrats to her. That makes two people now in this administration who have taken stone cold stunners. And they also happen to be the two worst stunners in history. Donald Trump and Linda McMahon have, in fact, taken the two worst stunners in history. Vince is probably a close third, and I'm not talking about the time that he flopped around like a fish when he took the stunner for the first time at MSG. Go back. All the Raws are on the network now. You can go back. It's a Raw from the fall of 2001. I think it might have been the show where Kurt Angle turned on WWF and aligned with the WCW, ECW people, but there was an episode where there was a match between Vince and Shane. And Austin ran in, and Austin went to give Vince a stunner, and that was easily one of the worst stunners I've ever seen. Because Vince, and this has happened before. In fact, I remember a time when Triple H, there was like a wedding going on, or maybe it was when he and Stephanie were renewing their vows, and Stephanie was the evil person, and Triple H just didn't see it, and finally he saw it, and he, you know, he like turned babyface or whatever. And he went to go pedigree Vince, and Vince had this tendency when he would take moves sometimes to jump or to go before he was supposed to. So like Triple H kind of went to pedigree him, but Vince went too early and it looked awkward. That's kind of what happened there with Austin and Vince. So if you want to go back and look at that stunner, Vince would be a close third, but Trump and Linda definitely took the worst ones. And on the subject of politics, actually, Booker T, who's been on this podcast before, announced on his own radio show that he plans to run for mayor of Houston in 2020. Apparently, he had a conversation about it with Rhino, who just lost an election himself in the state of Michigan, and it convinced him to run for office as well. So, much as we had King Booker all those years ago, we may soon be calling him Mayor Booker. Just walk around the city all day with Charmel behind him, just saying that over and over and over again. I'd vote for him. And finally, before I get to Raw, I want to shout out Ian Frisch over at Vice Sports. He published a very long, very detailed, very revealing look inside WWE on Friday. I encourage everyone to read his story. It's titled Breaking Kayfabe, an Inside Look at WWE's Unlikely Business Empire. It includes some things I had never heard before, namely a story about Shane McMahon that I'll mention in a second. A lot of it, like the theme of the story, is really focused on Vince and how at the end of the day, it's still Vince. It's what Vince wants. He calls the shots. He runs the show, no matter how big the company gets. How he often changes his mind on a whim about creative and such. And it's funny, you know, literally, as soon as I was done reading this story, I read this week's Observer, and in the Observer, there's an item on Vince McMahon, who last week had given the okay to them trying to strike deals with some indie promotions to air their content on the WWE Network. Apparently, just days later, he changed his mind. So, literally just got done reading this story, and about how Vince always changes his mind, and then I read that. And apparently they're still having discussions anyway, at least some people, I don't know if that means Triple H or not, but there are still discussions that are going on behind the scenes with different promotions with the idea that Vince has changed his mind before, he probably will change his mind again, so let's keep the lines of communication open here. But it's just, the man changes his mind more times than most people change channels. Like, you know, flipping through channels, you could flip through 500 channels on your TV. This guy changes his mind more often than that. But the Shane story I found the most interesting. Shane, as we all know, came back this year. First time since 2009 he was back with the company. And it turns out there was a meeting that he initiated in March of 2012. This would have been right before that first match between Rock and Cena. at WrestleMania. He had a meeting with his father. He brought along a friend by the name of James Fry. James Fry, I know that name's going to ring a bell to some of you. James Fry was the author of a famous book called A Million Little Pieces that Oprah once picked for her book club back when Oprah was still a thing and her book club was, I mean, if you were part of Oprah's book club, if she picked your book, it was a big deal because your book was going to end up in the top 10 bestsellers for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. So it was a big deal to make Oprah's book list, and she picked his book, and I guess it was kind of a memoir and about him being an addict, a drug addict, and all that kind of stuff. And apparently he lied. He fabricated certain parts of the story. Some was real, some was not. Or he wasn't as much of an addict, or maybe he wasn't an addict at all. Whatever it was, he lied about certain parts of his story, and this whole big controversy ensued. Which is funny to me, because in the end, he became more popular because of it. I think his books, he still sold more books, and it made, you know, Oprah brought ratings in and stuff. So, you know, this controversy that it turned into turned out to be probably a boon for all sides involved. You know, the whole controversy creates cash motto. Was that the title of Eric Bischoff's book, I think, right? Well, it's true. In this case, it was true. So that's his big claim to fame. Now he runs a publishing company called Full Fathom 5. So Shane heard about the creative strife, I guess, that was going on at the... I don't remember in particular what was going on at the time, but apparently they were having some creative issues or ratings were down. I don't know what was going on, but there were creative problems that he had heard about. And his idea that he pitched to his father was that he would completely take over the creative process in WWE. And meanwhile, Fry and his team at Full Fathom 5, they would act as consultants. They would help Shane. But Shane would effectively take over creative all by himself. Now, what Shane's background is in creative, I'm not quite sure, because I've heard stories that Shane, either he was briefly part of creative or he had been known to pitch ideas in the past and they weren't very good. So I know there's this notion that, oh, it's a shame, you know, Stephanie took over and everything went to shit and it should have been Shane and Shane would have been this great creative visionary. I've never seen any evidence of this. For all we know, Shane might have been worse. Apparently Shane got the meeting through Kevin Dunn, right? Everyone's favorite, Kevin Dunn. Because he and Kevin Dunn had remained good friends. So that was kind of, I guess Dunn was the conduit to put the two sides back together. In the story, Frisch says that a spokesperson for WWE, when he brought this up to them, because somebody had leaked this and he mentioned it, and the spokesperson denied it. He denied that Shane had any contact at all with WWE until this year. But then later, the spokesperson admitted that the meeting did, in fact, take place. So this is confirmed. This is not hearsay. This is not rumor and speculation. This meeting did in fact happen. He spoke to another source, Frisch said, who said that when Stephanie found out that Shane was coming in to meet with Vince, she went white in the face, like a ghost. And Triple H freaked out. And the story confirms also that there is great tension behind the scenes between Kevin Dunn, Stephanie, and Triple H. I've talked about this before on the podcast. That is not new, some new revelation. Kevin Dunn is very close to Vince. He's one of, he's a Vince guy. He's one of Vince's guys. Always has been. Has had a job for life because I guess his father saved some burning tapes from a car back in the day. And when the day comes that Vince is no longer around, Kevin Dunn knows that his goose is cooked. Because Stephanie and Triple H are going to want to boot him out of there and replace him with their own people. He is not their people. He's a Vince guy. And so here, as close as he is to Shane, he sets this meeting up with the hope that if Shane gets back in, hey, that's another very powerful ally for me to have in power here. It's not just Vince. Now I got Shane. And so that was probably the mentality there. But in the end, Vince, it didn't matter because Vince declined the offer and Shane just went back to doing whatever it was that he was doing. So I just find the whole thing to be fascinating that Shane would kind of swoop in there and would spook Stephanie and Triple H because they see potentially their power grip loosening maybe if Shane comes in and saves the day. And to me, it only makes sense. And I've talked about this before. I pitched this idea and I'm kind of bummed they didn't go with it. But to me, it just makes me want to see them do something even more on screen with Shane and Triple H. Because I said it months ago. I was hoping they would go down that road storyline-wise. And it doesn't look like they are. I'm sure Triple H probably wants nothing to do with any of this. But there's definitely some real life tension there behind the scenes, and I wish they would find a way to use some of that on screen, because it would make for far more interesting television than what they're giving us now. But I knew that even from the podcast that Shane did after he came back with Mick Foley. If you remember that whole thing, he was asked flat out about Triple H. And you remember what his answer was? He makes my sister happy. It was like, whoa, like, come on now, you know, like, come on. Get those two nose to beak in the middle of the ring and let the fireworks fly. That's what I want to see. Anyway, let's talk about Raw. Raw Monday night was live from Austin, Texas. No poll this week. I fell asleep during the show. Not because it bored me, but or maybe it did, but it was more so just because I've been trying to go to bed earlier, quite frankly, or trying to. It's part of this whole DDP yoga, changing my diet thing I've started in the last 2 weeks. I'm 2 weeks in. I didn't realize how much crap I was eating before. I mean, you've seen me. I mean, a lot of you have seen me or pictures of me. I'm not a large person, but still, you eat like shit, you feel like shit, right? So it's not been easy, but I'm doing it, and so far so good. A little more moody, maybe, cutting back on all those carbs, but I'm learning that at the end of the day, you could eat as many carbs and crap as you want to, as long as you don't overconsume calories. That's really the only thing that matters. But, you know, all my bread, bagels, and pretzels, right? Things I traditionally live on. Trying to cut that out. But it's going well. And actually, I saw that Vader is about to start DDP yoga. He tweeted that Dallas has agreed to help him lose 100 pounds that his doctors told him he needs to lose. And I think that's great news. And if anybody could help him, it's DDP. I've said before, that guy deserves a Hall of Fame induction just for the wrestlers whose lives he's helped save. Forget everything else. Forget all the other people that he's helped. I mean, how great would it be if he helps Vader lose the 100 pounds in the next, let's say, 2-3 months, and they both have a chance to take the stage in Orlando, you know, for their own induction at the Hall of Fame next year? Because both names have been floated for the Hall of Fame. DDP, I don't want to say it's a lock, but there's a pretty good chance he's going in. And Vader, you know, in light of this news, of course, he says he's only got 2 years left to live. He's got congestive heart failure. I'm not in favor of putting him in just as a charity induction because, oh, he might not be around. Like, Vader should already be in the Hall of Fame. So if ever there was a time to put him in, it's now. So they both deserve to go in. And I just think it makes for a great story if DDP helps him. He sheds most or all of the weight between now and the Hall of Fame, takes the stage looking svelte, kind of like the Big Show did on Monday, and they both get their moment to go into the Hall of Fame. I think that would be really cool. This was the second straight show built around the women. For the first time maybe ever, we had back-to-back Raws that were headlined by a segment involving the women. Last week, Sasha Banks won her third championship on Raw this year from Charlotte in a Falls Count Anywhere match. I thought it was their best match to date. Ric Flair came out at the end to raise Sasha's arm after the match. This week, they ended the show with Charlotte coming out, calling out her father to apologize to him for all the horrible things she said about him back in May when she fired him. We haven't seen Ric Flair on TV since. And this was supposed to be her grand apology. But it all turned out, I mean, it's a Flair segment, so what do you expect? It was a swerve, and instead she slapped him across the face and insulted her own grandmother by calling him a son of a bitch for supporting Sasha over her own flesh and blood, or his own flesh and blood. So Sasha ran out at that point, got beaten all over ringside, threw her head into the ring post. I mean, Sasha got the hell beaten out of her. And Charlotte dragged Sasha's dead body right in front of Flair. She mocked them both and then walked out. And that's how they went off the air. That's how the show ended. I thought it was great stuff. And I said this on Twitter. I know some people disagree with me, but this is how I feel. That right now, I think Charlotte may well be the best heel in the entire company when it comes to the two main rosters, Raw or SmackDown. It's her or The Miz. Never thought I'd hear myself say that. But to me, those two people right there are just, they're killing it with what they're doing. And I think that they are the best heels. And Charlotte may well be the best right now. And people were like upset. Oh, what about Alexa Bliss? No love for Alexa Bliss. Look, no one loves Alexa Bliss more than me. I was talking her up back when she first debuted on NXT. I love Alexa Bliss. I think she's great. But I would not put her as the top heel right now. I just think Charlotte, between, you know, matches and promos and just the way she carries herself and even just the little things. I like, you know, for example, I like when, and this happens a lot during her promos. Maybe it wouldn't, I guess, if she didn't acknowledge it, but she gets whatted a lot. The crowd does the what chant a lot when Charlotte is out there talking, because I think in part she reacts to it. But there's part of me that kind of likes that because most people will just keep trudging along, or, you know, if they don't have a lot of experience with it, they'll get knocked off a little bit. They'll be a little unnerved by it. Even Roman Reigns, every now and then, Roman Reigns will react. But he'll react almost in like a heelish way where it's like, oh, turn this guy already. But Charlotte will react to it, and she'll kind of turn it back around on them. You know, and I like that. She's really grown into, I think, a great promo and just overall a great performer, and I do think that she may well be the best heel, like I said, in the entire company on either roster right now. Now, if we include NXT, then she is not the greatest heel, because I would put Samoa Joe in that spot. So Samoa Joe, to me, is probably the number one guy they have right now. But if we're just counting Raw and SmackDown, Charlotte and The Miz, they're right there together. AJ Styles is great. Kevin Owens is great, especially when he teases a big move in a match and then he ends up using a chin lock instead, right? He does little things like that that are just great. But both of those guys are also very well liked by a big segment of the audience, or they're doing comedy. Charlotte is pretty well hated, and I think she plays the role well. Miz also does. Him and Maryse, I think, are a great combo. So that's why I immediately think of those two. But you just look at how far Charlotte has come in the last 3 years. That's all it's been. She made her debut on NXT 3 years ago. That's it. And now she's headlining Raw. She's already headlined one pay-per-view. She may yet headline another one. Earlier in the show, you know, Sasha challenged her to a 30-minute Ironman match at Roadblock. Now, you knew the rematch was coming, right? That in and of itself is not a surprise. I didn't see that stipulation coming. But I said last week, I just hope they don't go the predictable route and swerve us, which would be the second swerve, because we had one swerve on this show. But if they swerve us again, and they have Ric Flair help Charlotte win back the title, I don't want to see that. Sasha coming out to rescue Flair on this show, I mean, to me, this had Sting and Ric Flair written all over it. If there's one thing you never do, it's trust Ric Flair. Sting never seemed to learn that lesson. And I fear that Sasha Banks may be kind of in the Sting spot here. I hope I'm wrong. But I'm looking at this Roadblock card, and I would not be against putting the women again in the main event. The finish to their match at Hell in a Cell was a mistake. Other than preserving Charlotte's unbeaten streak on pay-per-views, I don't know why Sasha had to lose the title in Boston, but it made for a flat finish. I know some people think that match was just wonderful, right? Peaches and cream. I thought it was disappointing. I've seen them have better matches. In fact, just this week, they had a much better match. And I think part of that was because they weren't trapped inside the Hell in a Cell. When you're locked inside that cell, there's only so much you can do. I don't think they escaped or anything like that. They were locked in there. On Monday night, they had a false count anywhere match. They can brawl up the stage. Charlotte's doing moonsaults off the announce desk, off the stage. They're brawling into the crowd. Sasha wins a match. You might be, somebody on Twitter said, is Sasha Banks the first person to ever win a match or win the championship while sitting in someone's lap? And he sent me like a screenshot of Sasha sitting in this dude's lap as Charlotte taps out. Like, it was a crazy match. And you could do a lot more when, you know, you have that kind of stipulation. So I'm sure that probably, played a role in it. But whatever it was about that match at Hell in a Cell, Sasha not being heavy enough to break the table and just sort of rolling off of it, or her being pinned out of nowhere the way she was, the finish was flat, the match was not what it could have been, and, you know, it may not have done their chances well of having another pay-per-view main event after that. But now they've headlined two straight Raw episodes heading into this next pay-per-view. We got one more Raw left. It's the go-home show tomorrow night already. The pay-per-view is next Sunday. Their feud, to me, still has more juice than anything else on this show. Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns, I don't doubt they're going to go out there and have a great match, but am I so into this feud? Oh my God, I can't wait to see Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. No, not really. I really don't care. You know, I don't. What's there to care about? Roman Reigns, can he become a double champion? Who gives a shit? We've already seen this. Seth Rollins already did it last year. Why do I have to see Roman Reigns do the same thing? Who cares? I'm more compelled by the story between Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho. But Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho ain't the match that we're getting next Sunday. If that were the match, I would say that should be the main event. They've been building that up for months. The people are into Jericho. They'll be rooting for him probably. And I'm sure it'll be a great match. But that's not the match. So I'm looking at this card and I'm saying to myself, you know what? Now they have the Iron Man stipulation. Why not put him on last? That probably should be the main event, in all honesty. Again, I mean, they have more juice than any other feud right now other than Jericho and Owens going on this show. But Jericho and Owens is not the match next weekend. Now with the Iron Man stipulation, you're either getting a new champion again, and God, I hope not, because I think they need to give that a rest for a while. Or we're going to get the big climactic finish with the seconds counting down on the clock. They're tied up, you know, zero falls apiece or three falls to three or whatever it is. And you get this big dramatic win for Sasha Banks, finally, who did not get the big dramatic win in her hometown in October. She finally gets it here at Roadblock, right? That would be, I think, a fine finish for the pay-per-view. And she ends Charlotte's streak that they've been talking about. She's undefeated on pay-per-view. And I think that would make for a worthy climax here. Or they could go a third route and have them go to a time limit draw so that Sasha keeps her title and Charlotte stays undefeated, and then we get to do it again, right? That would totally be the finish that WWE would do. The more I think about that, it's like, oh my God, they're going to do that finish, aren't they? Because then it's like even Steven, right? That way we don't have to beat Charlotte, but Sasha gets to keep her title. So I hope that is not the finish that they have planned. But anyway, they've really, I think, positioned Charlotte as one of the top stars on this brand. She's like their sexy star from Lucha Underground, but with all the, without all the intergender crap. We haven't really seen any woman positioned in this way or as strongly on this show. I mean, Stephanie McMahon aside, because Stephanie has to be more powerful and all-knowing than everybody else. But aside from her, I don't think we've seen someone, a female on the show positioned this strongly since AJ Lee. And it wasn't AJ Lee wrestling matches, right? When AJ Lee was doing her thing, she was involved with CM Punk, she was involved with Daniel Bryan, she was involved with John Cena, and she headlined plenty of shows. There were plenty of times they went off the air with AJ Lee involved in that final segment in some way. I still remember when she shoved Punk and Bryan off the off the ropes, and they both came crashing down through a table, and they went off the air with a shot of AJ Lee, who I think was the referee in their match or something like that. I mean, they made this woman the general manager of the show at one point. So we really haven't seen anyone push like this, I think, since AJ. The funniest moment of the night came in the opening segment when Seth Rollins suddenly remembered that he has this great hatred for Triple H. And he says, I want Triple H. How nice of them to remember. Wow, that was really nice. So he and Kevin Owens, they bantered for a little bit back and forth. And Owens, who is attempting to make amends with Chris Jericho, who he greatly offended on the show the week before. He was trying to make amends with his best friend. He said that he had gotten Jericho three gifts. The three gifts of Jericho. The first one was a match with Roman Reigns tonight for the United States Championship. The second one was a match with Seth Rollins at Roadblock. Rollins, of course, killed Jericho with a pedigree on a car about a week or two ago. And so this was the second gift. And the third gift was a surprise opponent for Seth Rollins right now, which turned out to be The Big Show. I take back what I said before about Charlotte being the best heel on this show. Kevin Owens reclaimed that status by giving us a match between Seth Rollins and The Big Show. Big Show looks svelte. He looked like he had, melted away half of the Big Show. He became the Medium Show, I guess. I mean, he hasn't been this slim since his days in WCW. Unfortunately, we didn't get any kip-ups in this match like we used to get from him back in WCW. It was a brief match. Thankfully, it didn't last very long. Only went a few minutes before Big Show got tired of Kevin Owens yelling at him from the outside of the ring. And then he gave him a choke slam, and then he just walked to the back. So my question is, does this qualify as another turn? Because he came out, right? Kevin Owens is the heel. He brought out Big Show to wrestle Seth Rollins. So, I mean, he was smiling on his way to the ring. I don't know if that makes Big Show a heel, but Here, he chokeslammed Kevin Owens. He turned on him and walked to the back. So I would like to think that this counts as yet another turn for the Big Show in his merry-go-round of turns over the years. And then to add insult to injury, Rollins laid out Owens with a pedigree at the end of the segment. Jack Gallagher finally made his Raw debut, got a win over Arya Daivari. Gallagher is just so much fun to watch. That's why I was waiting for him to come, because the first I had ever seen of him was in the Cruiserweight Classic, and he was the one who probably impressed me more than anyone. So it was very cool to see him finally make it to Raw. Daivari attacked his leg after the match, which led to a rematch between the two of them on 205 Live, which I'll talk about later. Lana and Rusev, they duped Enzo Amore on this show into thinking that the two of them had a real fight and they had broken up, and she invited him back to her hotel room. This is unbelievable. So let's assume that Rusev and Lana did have a fight and she threw her ring down on the floor, and Enzo sees this as an opportunity, right? And Lana, who is now on the rebound and is not thinking straight, she says to Enzo, "Why don't you come back to my hotel room," right? And Enzo, who can't help himself, gets all excited, and he's like, "See you later, Cass. I'm going over to the hotel." Why are we supposed to think that Enzo Amore is somehow in the right in all of this? Lana is still a married woman. And not only that, but let's look at this from the perspective of actually having a brain and being smart. Enzo is not a big guy. Enzo is not a tough guy. Rusev is a big guy. Rusev is a tough guy. And Rusev is the last person on that roster and one of the last people in the world who I would want to piss off by being caught in a hotel room with the man's wife. So, I have no sympathy for what happened here to Enzo Amore. He got exactly what he deserved. He's lucky he actually got off as easy as he did, because there are a lot of other people who would not have left him breathing on the floor. At least he still had breath in his body when this segment was over. He should consider himself lucky. So Lana did come on to him and said, "Listen here, you know, I'm going to be in this hotel room. Why don't you come on by?" And Enzo was all excited. He happened to see Ric Flair pulling up in a limousine for his segment later in the show. And Flair was, you know, "Hey, why don't you use my limo? You got to get to the hotel. Don't call Uber. Take my limo." So he gladly let Enzo borrow his limo, because why not? He's the nature boy, right? Who knows better than Space Mountain and the ladies and all that crap than Ric Flair does, right? $22,000 a month in alimony payments, be damned. So of course it was a setup, and Rusev was waiting in the hotel room, and once Lana got Enzo to take his pants off, Rusev pounced and beat Enzo to within an inch of his life. Literally dragged his lifeless body out of the room and into the hallway. And left him laying. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, you know, Noah and I had to lower our voices once because we were recording a podcast in a hotel room somewhere and someone complained about the noise. And yet here, there was an all-out assault. There was a fight here, and not even a fight, it was a one-sided ass-kicking. Rusev was throwing this guy around into the furniture, they were knocking shit over, and no one thought to call down to the front desk to make a noise complaint. It's like, this Rusev is throwing this guy all over the room, and not one person bothered to call down to the front desk. I want to stay in that hotel next time. That's where I want to record my next podcast. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn had a good match. I think it's impossible for the two of them to have a bad match. Some are good, some are great, but they've never been bad. Owens caught him with a pop-up powerbomb for the win. They aired a nice profile package on Rich Swann. He said that his father died when he was only 12. His mom passed away then when he was 16. His father didn't pass away. His father was murdered. They didn't mention that here in this segment, but if you read up on his story, his dad was murdered. And if you really look back into other parts of his story, it's pretty compelling stuff. I mean, what they aired here was pretty compelling, and you really want to root for the guy. You want to see the guy do well, to see where he came from. But if you read up on his story, you know, what they don't mention is that he got hooked on cocaine. He fell in with the wrong crowd, joined a gang or something, and he started doing cocaine. And he only got off cocaine because his dealer died of a heart attack. So I guess for him, that was kind of a wake-up call. And he stopped doing cocaine, and look where he is now. Now he's the Cruiserweight Champion. So I guess that isn't a very PG part of the story to tell, but I found that to be more compelling than anything they mentioned on TV once I read up on that. But it is a pretty amazing story. He did beat TJ Perkins here on the show. Bayley beat Alicia Fox. Bayley now has this new deal now because she's on the main roster. We can't keep things the way they were. We got to make it better. And so now she has Bayley Bears that she throws out to the crowd before her match. And apparently she tried to give a Bayley Bear to Cedric Alexander in the back, who of course is Alicia Fox's on-screen boyfriend now. And this pissed off Alicia Fox because she thought that Bayley was making a move on her man. And so it led to this match. I swear, they write these storylines for four-year-olds. Mark Henry pinned Titus O'Neil in about 20 seconds with the World's Strongest Slam and what the announcers billed as the Tussle in Texas. They were hyping this up to the point of absurdity. Obviously, they were just doing it for fun because they were going way, way, way over the top with it. So the announcers were just trying to have some fun. I guess, I don't know that the fans were having any fun, but hey, at least they amused themselves. And hey, also a rare time where the hometown star actually won a match in their hometown. Or home state, I guess would be more accurate to say. Chris Jericho and Roman Reigns had best match on the show, even better than Owens and Zayn. Had a real good match for the U.S. title. It's funny, you know, last week I talked about what a mistake it was, I think, to put the U.S. title on Reigns and how if they did, they should have gotten it off of him, you know, months ago and gotten it on Chris Jericho. So that way you have Kevin Owens with the Universal title, you've got Chris Jericho with the U.S. title, and they didn't do that. And here we go. All of a sudden, Roman Reigns and Chris Jericho go one-on-one for the U.S. title, and I'm thinking, nah, they wouldn't do it, would they? Well, they didn't. They did not, in fact, put the championship on Jericho. After making it very clear to Kevin Owens that he did not want him to interfere in this match, he wanted Jericho to stay out of his business, we're not friends anymore. Owens came out anyway, he ended up distracting Jericho by accident, and Jericho turned around into a spear and was pinned. There was also a match on the show, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson against the team of Cesaro and Sheamus to determine a new number one contender for the Raw Tag Team titles, who would battle the New Day. The New Day were out there watching the match. They were ringside for this, and it broke down into a giant brawl. It was a no contest, and so now it will be a three-way tomorrow night on Raw for the Tag Team titles. The New Day defends against Cesaro and Sheamus and Gallows and Anderson. And we are, in fact, only hours away from New Day finally breaking Demolition's record of 478 straight days as tag team champions. And if they can do that, if they can win this match tomorrow and make it to midnight, they will officially become the longest reigning tag team champions in WWE history. Which I expect they will do. And I hope they use Demolition's finisher to do it. Just as a little tribute to them. Because look, I know people are upset about this. Who cares? Honestly, does it matter? Does it matter if Demolition has the record or the New Day has the record? I guarantee you before they even acknowledge it on TV, a lot of people who were getting all upset and all bent out of shape about it, they didn't even know the Demolition were the longest reigning tag team champions. All of a sudden, oh, this, what an offense. They can't do this. This can't happen. I hope it does happen. I hope it does happen, and I hope they use Demolition's finish. Because I also think that that happened to be a pretty freaking cool finish they used to have. A lot better than the one that New Day uses. They used to have the thing that get the guy on one knee and smash, or whoever would come off the ropes with an elbow smash. So I'd love to see them do that. Show ended with the segment that I mentioned earlier with Charlotte, Ric Flair, and Sasha Banks. I thought that was very good. Another good effort this week. I have pretty much given up on watching this entire show straight through. There might be some weeks where I do, but I'm getting myself out of the mode where I just sit in front of a TV for 3 hours and I watch Raw. I can't do it. I just can't do it. You know, sometimes I'll fall asleep. Other times I just, now I go do other things. I went to the gym the other week. You know, I work a full day. I come home. The only time I can go to the gym is 8 o'clock at night. I never do that on Mondays because of Raw. I've done it twice now. I'm like, oh, it's 8 o'clock. Raw's going on. We'll go to the gym. And look, if I could watch Raw at the gym, I would. I mean, they have a TV usually up. I probably could say, hey, we want to put on USA, but I don't care enough to do it. And I just, you know, do my thing, and I figure, okay, Raw, it'll be on the DVR, or I could get it online or whatever. There's a million different ways I could watch this show now. And so I'll just watch it piecemeal. And that's what I've started doing over the last few weeks, is I will not watch this entire show straight through. I may watch an hour. I may not watch any of it until Tuesday or Wednesday and finish it on Thursday. that's what's been going. Now, the problem with that is there's so many shows. You know, I review Raw, I review SmackDown. Now we have 205 Live, we have NXT, we have Lucha Underground. People want me to get back into watching Ring of Honor. I'm going to have to watch TNA this week because it's the final deletion show at the Hardy compound, so I have to watch that. So if I don't watch it when it initially airs and I'm like, I'll just watch it later, all of a sudden it gets all bunched up with all the other shows. It's a pain in the ass. But that's what I've been doing with Raw, is watching it piecemeal. And I find the show a lot more tolerable that way. It's not always more enjoyable. If you have a bad Raw, it doesn't matter if you watch it in one sitting or if you watch it over the course of 4 days. Instead of 3 hours of shit on a Monday, it'll be 4 days of shit. So it's not like it makes the show better somehow, but it does make it easier to digest. It makes it a lot more tolerable, and maybe it does make for, you know, hey, I look at this segment a little bit different than I might have if it happened in the middle of hour three and I would just be pissed off, you know, that they did this on a Monday. So that's what I've been doing. I mean, I've heard for years from you guys, a lot of you guys have just completely given up on watching the show. You listen to my podcast and other podcasts to get your fix of what's going on. And look, I can see why. It's just, it's a long show, you know, it's a long show. I just can no longer justify sitting there for 3 hours straight like a couch potato every Monday. You know, pay-per-views are one thing. Pay-per-views are special events. It happens every few weeks. No commercials. Generally speaking, there's a lot more action, a lot less talking. But I just had to make a change because it broke me. It finally broke me. And it's only been a few weeks, but so far I find it to be better this way. SmackDown on Tuesday night. Now, look, before I get into all the stuff that happened on SmackDown, there have been rumors floating around, and I don't know where this started. So again, just be weary when you hear these rumors of how they get started and where they're from, because I certainly have not heard about this on any reputable site. But there have been rumors that WWE is possibly looking to move AJ Styles over to the Raw brand as part of a second draft after WrestleMania next year. Now, naturally, AJ Styles is the biggest star on SmackDown, so of course they would want to move him to Raw. That's been their MO for years. Raw is their flagship. Raw is their baby. Well, to hell with the baby. Keep him right where he is. I say no. Leave him on SmackDown. You know, it's funny, like Edge. I look at Edge, and I think there's a lot of similarities between Edge and AJ Styles in this respect. Edge was not as big of a star at the time as AJ is now, world traveler and champions and different promotions and all that. But Edge was a rising star in WWE. He got that big break, really, from, you know, boinking Lita and then the whole thing that happened with Matt Hardy. But he still was only at a certain level. And it wasn't until they moved him over to that SmackDown brand and they made him the face of SmackDown, the lead heel, the lead star on that brand, that he became a whole different person, and he really elevated his game, and he became a main eventer. He became a top guy in that company. And I remember, you know, reading about it and hearing about it at the time, and if he would have stayed on Raw, you know, it was still a Triple H show, or DX was ruling the roost on that show. It was Shawn and Triple H. Edge knew, he had to be smart enough to know, I'm doomed if I stay on this show. I can't be here. If I want to have the chance to be a top guy, the face of a show, it ain't going to be on Raw. So the best thing that ever happened to him was moving him over to SmackDown. He owned that brand. He carried that show on his back. It was the Edge show. And I think we've seen a lot of that with AJ Styles this year. Maybe not to that degree. Edge was on SmackDown for a number of years. AJ's only been exclusive to SmackDown for a few months. But I think there are some similarities there in that AJ has taken this show and really has put it on his back. And I mean, Dean Ambrose has stepped up his game as well. I, you know, got to give him credit. John Cena is a big name, but he hasn't been around as much. But AJ is the MVP of this show. He's the MVP, I think, of the entire company this year. But he's the MVP of SmackDown. And so to take him off of SmackDown, to put him on Raw, we want him on Raw, I think would be a very short-sighted move. Now, maybe in 5 months, you know, whatever it is, after WrestleMania, things will look different. Maybe there'll be a lot of new faces on both brands. Guys come back from injury and stuff, and maybe I'll feel differently about it. But right now, I think it's a bad idea, and I would keep him exactly where he is. In fact, I say move a couple of guys over to SmackDown to give him some new fresh faces to feud with. But to me, there's no even trade that they can make. You know, I guess Roman Reigns is, you know, he's a big star also in their eyes. And you could swap Reigns and Styles, although I don't know about having Reigns and John Cena on the same show. I don't think you need to do that. But to me, there really is no even trade that they can make for AJ Styles. He is the best in the company. Seth Rollins, it's not enough. Rollins is good, but he's no AJ Styles. They'd have to move Rollins and someone else if they wanted to make that a fair trade. And unless they make other moves, let's say they do that. Let's say they swap AJ Styles for Seth Rollins. That's the big move they make. AJ goes to Raw, Seth goes to SmackDown. If the rosters really don't look all that different in 5 or 6 months than they do now, who exactly is Seth Rollins going to feud with? Now, Rollins now is a babyface, so he's going over there as a babyface. Who is he feuding with? John Cena? Again? Dean Ambrose? Again? Right? I mean, it just, to me, it's a bad move, and I hope it doesn't happen. And the funny thing is, you know that if they moved AJ to Raw, you know what the first move they would make over to SmackDown would be. It would be the club. Because they would not, you know, they just can't have those guys on the same show. So like all the times I was like, oh man, I wish they would move Anderson and Gallows over to SmackDown. And I still think they should. But you know that if AJ moved, they would just take those two and put them on the other show. Just to kind of fuck with everybody. So speaking of AJ, they had promoted a championship match here on the show with James Ellsworth getting a title shot against AJ. They just will not let this Ellsworth thing go. But Styles hurt his ankle at the pay-per-view. He came out here in a walking boot. So they ended up switching the main event to an Intercontinental title match with Miz defending against Dean Ambrose. And Ambrose did walk out here to say that, actually he didn't say anything. He walked out here to lay out Ellsworth with the dirty deeds, and he immediately walked to the back. So I guess that was supposed to be his great revenge on him. Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt soundly defeated Heath Slater and Rhino to retain their tag team titles. After the show on Talking Smack, Rhino blamed Slater for the loss and ended up walking off the set. So it appears that their team, if it's not over already, is certainly on the rocks. I think that act has run its course. So I think the timing seems right to break those two up. Then we had Miz TV with Dean Ambrose. This was something else. So Miz tried to get under his skin. He was going, you must be really angry. You must be really upset after what happened to you at TLC with James Ellsworth coming out. You're this guy that you helped get a contract. He's a friend of yours, and he turns his back. He puts the knife right in your back. He pushes you off the ladder. He costs you the WWE Championship. You must just be fuming mad. And Ambrose just says, no, I'm not angry. I'm surprised, but I'm not angry. I don't know, if somebody cost me the championship and pushed me off a 15-foot ladder, I'd be pretty pissed off about it. But we've seen this before. I mean, many, 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 many times with John Cena over the years, he would lose a championship, he would come out on TV the next night smiling. It's okay, I'm gonna get a rematch anyway, it's all good. Remember Sheamus did that once, and that pissed me off too, because I thought it was like a virus that was starting to infect everybody else. It's bad enough Cena was doing it. Sheamus lost the world title at a pay-per-view one to the Big Show. Came out on Raw the next night. He looked almost happy about it. This big Irish tough guy comes out. He's like, yeah, I lost the title. It happens, you know. It's like, no! You should be upset, especially the way it happened. But he wasn't. I never get that. I never understand that. I really don't. I never understood the logic behind it. I never understood it then. I don't understand it now. Maybe he was just, he didn't want to give in to the Miz, maybe, and because Miz was trying to get under his skin. But still, I mean, Ambrose, you know, he should be very upset over what happened. And he didn't really come off that way and said that he wasn't angry. So I thought that was dumb. But the kicker here was Miz presenting him with the first ever Miz Participation Award. He gave Ambrose a participation award for trying at TLC, even though he lost. And the fans chanted, you deserve it, at Dean Ambrose. I laughed, legitimately laughed out loud at that. That was funny. I don't know if it was intended that way. They could not have possibly expected the fans to chant that, but that was funny. This is actually the part where Daniel Bryan came out and they made Ambrose against Miz for the IC title as the main event. Backstage, Nikki Bella randomly, I put that in air quotes here, randomly bumped into a little girl named Sophia Grace, who was there to promote some new song that she had just recorded. I have no idea who this girl is, but when the segment was over, they managed or they mentioned that she is a YouTube star. A YouTube star. The only YouTube star, as far as I'm concerned, is Leroy Jenkins. That's a YouTube star I'd like to see at some point come on this show. This girl, I went on her channel. Her bio says that she is an actress, singer, and recording artist. I guess the bar has been set very, very low now for being a recording artist. I'm recording this podcast as we speak. Does that make me a recording artist? Does that make episode 473 my latest single? And in the videos, she says she's 13. Or at least in the comments section, it says she's 13 years old. There ain't no way that girl's 13. She doesn't look a day over 10. So that puts her right in WWE's target demographic. I guess that explains her being on the show. We had Alexa Bliss come out for her championship celebration. This was very short, but she had a good line here. If you remember the week before the pay-per-view when Becky had taken that table bump during the contract signing, in the back she basically called Alexa a little bitch. So this week Alexa comes out, she's got the title, and she references that line. She says, you know, Becky had a word that she used on me that rhymes with witch. And I'm like, ugh, oh, come on now, just say it. Just say it. Don't dance around it. Stop this PG bullshit, you know what I mean? And then she did. She said, well, this little bitch now runs the entire SmackDown Women's Division. And I said, bingo. Or as JBL would say, ball game. There you go. We need more of that. Like, Becky came out after this, and it was almost like she caught herself. She was like, and now the SmackDown Division is run by, and she, whatever word she used, and then she goes, this little, and then she paused, she's like, this little girl. And I'm like, ugh. Like, come on. Like, and I will say, though, Becky Lynch at least seemed to be more angry about losing her title than Dean Ambrose did losing his, possibly winning the championship. So, kudos to her for at least seeming like she was more upset by the whole thing. And she wanted her rematch right now, like on the spot, and Alexa was about to give it to her, and then, you know, as a good heel, Alexa bailed at the last second, and she went to the back. So that was the end of the segment. We had Ambrose and Miz in the main event for the Intercontinental title. Maryse crotched Ambrose on the top rope, which led to a near fall with Miz using Daniel Bryan's running knee. So that feud continues. This brought out James Ellsworth, who tried to explain to the referee what Maryse had done, but all it did was distract the referee while Ambrose had Miz pinned. So Ambrose gets up, he sees Ellsworth, he's got this shocked look on his face, but remember, not angry. And before he could do anything, Miz caught Ambrose with the skull-crushing finale and pinned him to retain the championship. So that is now the second title in, what, 48 hours that Ellsworth has cost Ambrose. Maybe this week on TV, Ambrose could give Ellsworth a gift card as a show of appreciation, since apparently he doesn't get angry when people cost him championships. This was not the best episode of SmackDown I have seen. Kind of boring. Not a lot there. Chalk it up maybe to the fact that AJ was hurt. Maybe they had something more planned with Styles and he couldn't go, so they switched the main event. But just overall, I thought a pretty weak show. 205 Live. I did catch the second episode here of 205 Live. I'll watch it as much as I can. I can't guarantee that I'll be doing full reviews every week of this show. But I mentioned in the Raw recap, Cedric Alexander and Alicia Fox now apparently are an item on TV. Normally I would say, what a lucky guy that Cedric Alexander is, but this is wrestling, so you know nothing good could possibly come from this. Cedric had a match with Noam Dar to open the show. Lots of holds. Lots and lots and lots and lots of holds. I watched this show a few days after it aired, on my own time. So I'm fine with a well-worked wrestling match, that's fine. I mean, I can never really complain about a well-worked wrestling match, right? But I can just imagine those people sitting there in that building after watching 2 hours of SmackDown, having watched AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose and The Miz and all these people, now having to sit there at 10 p.m. watching Noam Dar working over a body part on Cedric Alexander for what felt like 10 minutes straight. It's basically what this is. This is the third hour of Raw on a Tuesday. That's what this is. Eerily quiet in this building. This show should start and end with all action, this Cruiserweight show. I saw the video on, I think it was on the WrestleTalk TV YouTube channel. I saw the video that some fan shot. And he did it in vertical format, by the way. I don't know if he just did that not to get caught by security recording it or not, but you would think by now people would know better than to record vertical with their cell phones. But he has this video up, and it's showing some... I don't know if it's a member of the WWE staff or if it's a member of the arena staff, but it's some staff person ushering people into empty seats on the hard camera side. They're trying to move people from other sections and move them from their seats to fill up what are now empty seats that are on camera. And I'm watching this, and there's a match going on. I don't know if it was the opening match, this match, or if it was the main event or what. It probably was the opening match. But I'm watching this and I'm like, this could easily be avoided. This could easily be avoided by just taping this show before SmackDown. I don't know why that wasn't apparent to them when they first started this. Everybody said it. I said it. Everybody said it. There is no reason for this show to be live. That's the only reason I could think of. This show has to be live. It's 2:05 live, so it has to go on at 10 p.m. No, it doesn't. NXT might go live next year. Or at least that's the rumor. That I can see. I think that would be kind of cool. They don't have to, but if they did, cool. If they want to tape live from Full Sail every week. But does 205 really need to be live? Let's be honest here. They can still call it 205 Live if they want. They don't have to change the name. 205 Live to tape doesn't quite have the same ring to it. So I wouldn't change it to that. But it's just, I watched that video and it's like, it's really sad. Like, it's sad to see there's a match in progress and they're just moving people into, hey, come on over, you know, like... It doesn't have to be that way. But anyway, Darby beat Cedric with a running knee to the head, and then after the match, he cut a promo dedicating his win to Cedric's new girlfriend, Alicia Fox. See, I told you, nothing good can come from this already. Already, she's becoming an issue. Aria Daivari beat my man, Jack Gallagher, after Gallagher beat him on Raw, so a good old 50-50. Gallagher was selling his leg after Daivari injured it in their last match, and if people were into Gallagher's stuff, I don't know, you know, 6 months from now if they'll still be as into it, but I think it's a novelty. People, there really is nobody else on the roster quite like him doing the kind of moves and the kind of counters and stuff that he does. He's a lot of fun to watch. And so they were into his stuff. But again, a lot of working the leg, working the body part with Daivari going after the knee and grounding him. I don't know that when people were excited about seeing a cruiserweight show, if they were interested in seeing, you know, a lot of ground offense here. But that's what we got here, and Daivari won with a frog splash, and what I'm sure will not be the last match we see between these two. TJ Perkins came to the ring to do commentary with Mauro Ranallo, Corey Graves, and Austin Aries for the main event, which pit the outlandish Rich Swann against Brian Kendrick for the Cruiserweight title. That's the new name that they are drilling into our brains for Rich Swann. They did it on Raw, they did it on this show. He's the outlandish Rich Swann. What's so outlandish about him? That's my question. What's so outlandish? What is the exact definition? You know what? I'll tell you what we'll do. Let me grab my phone here. We're going to do this. We're going to ask Siri. How about that? We're going to ask Siri for the definition of the word outlandish. So here, oh, and it's already picking up what I'm saying. Let's end that here. So let's find out. What is the definition of the word outlandish? Let's see.
Outlandish means looking or sounding bizarre or unfamiliar.
Okay. Looking or sounding bizarre or unfamiliar. Well, I mean, the guy does have wings on his tights, so I guess that would qualify as bizarre, but I still don't see what's so outlandish about him. Anyway, Austin Aries, thank you, Siri. Austin Aries was so awesome during this match, verbally embarrassing TJ Perkins on commentary. At one point, he just asked TJ, he goes, why are you even out here? He's like, it's like, he goes, are you scouting the match or are you trying to find a Pikachu? Like, what are you doing out here? I died. That was awesome. Then there was another point in the match where Perkins, now Perkins has lost to both of these guys. He's now lost to Rich Swann. He lost on Monday. He lost the championship to Brian Kendrick, right? And Aries just goes, can you beat these guys at anything besides video games? And you could just feel the tension between these two. You could feel the tension between the... Hopefully it leads to a match at some point. Because I think that naturally this should build to a match. The only problem is, again, Aries is probably going to be out for a few more months. But I'd like to see that. But Aries definitely kept it interesting. I know there were a few people who I saw on Twitter who were like, oh, the commentary's taking away from the match. No, it's not. The commentary made the match better. So as for the match itself, I thought it was a really good match. They were outside. Swan accidentally shoved Kendrick into TJ Perkins. TJ got up in his face, and Kendrick just kind of stared him down, but he realized, oh shit, I better get back in the ring before I get counted out. So he got back inside, he ate a spin kick of doom to the face, and got pinned, so Rich Swann retains his title. Looks like they are setting up a three-way, maybe for Roadblock. I guess we'll find out. So that was the show, and here's the deal with 205 Live. After the first two episodes, now we're two episodes deep, which I thought were solid. So some good wrestling, but this is not what the Cruiserweight Classic was. And I think that, again, this feels like the third hour of Raw on a Tuesday. I don't think that's what people were hoping for when they filled out that survey and they said that they wanted to see a weekly Cruiserweight show, which clearly people voted for. I voted in the same poll. All of a sudden, we get a weekly Cruiserweight show. This is what people wanted to see, and I really don't think that this is what they had in mind. I really don't. I think it's the exact same style as the other two shows, but with maybe more video packages, and definitely with better announcers. You know, tape the show before SmackDown or move it to Full Sail. That to me is the first thing they need to do before they do anything else. Tape it before SmackDown or move it into Full Sail. That's step one. Step two, be different from Raw and SmackDown. The problem is that what we see on this show is just an extension of Raw. These storylines are meant to bleed over from Raw, and I guess that's okay. But make the show feel more different than it does. You got the purple ropes, they got the logo on the canvas, they have more video packages, they've done a few things, but it's not different enough. You know? I mean, I think part of it is, let these guys wrestle their own style. Jack Gallagher, someone like him, he already has a unique style, all of his own. But there is not anyone else that I've seen so far, short of maybe Swan, who feels all that unique. I don't want to feel like I'm watching superstars just with smaller guys. So they've got to work on that. And I don't have all the answers. I just know what I'm seeing, and what I'm seeing is not what I thought this show would be. And it's okay, but this show should be more than okay. It shouldn't just be, you know, there to just, hey, we got more content on the network. I mean, that's great and all, and I'm glad that they're giving us more content on the network, but to me, this is not what a Cruiserweight show should be. And so they've got to amp it up. They've got to amp it up a little bit. People don't want to see, you know, just working the leg and working that. I mean, that's fine, but it can't just be that. It's got to be more than that. It's got to be, you got to have a couple of matches here, maybe bookend the show with just balls-to-the-wall action. Okay, we saw some stuff on Lucha Underground this week, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. There was a match. They had a couple of four-way matches, actually. And it was like nonstop action. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, this is what this show should be. Not every single match, but this is what we need to see more of on this show. And they've got Grand Metalik and Lince Dorado, and I know they're like hyping these guys up. Coming soon, coming soon. It's like Emelina all over again. Apparently we're going to finally get the debut of Emma this Monday. I'll believe it when I see it. They pulled this shit with the Funkasaurus. But it's like, coming soon, coming soon. These guys are already there. Why am I not seeing them? Come on, let's go. You know, it's like, let's get the party started here. So they've got to ramp it up. They've got to make it more exciting.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT open with Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa in their first appearance at Full Sail since winning the tag team titles at TakeOver. Celebrating with the fans in the crowd. Before they could speak, they were interrupted by the Powers of Pain and Paul Ellering. Ellering said that their celebration was a bit premature. Did I say Powers of Pain? I meant Authors of Pain, excuse me. It would be cool, though, to see the Powers of Pain if they did show up to challenge for the titles. The Revival was out next, claiming they were the real number one contenders and throwing a little bit of shade at the Authors of Pain, which did not sit well with them. They walked down to the ring. They literally shoved Dash and Dawson on their asses, and they scurried away, and that was the segment. We then got a video package for Showtime Percy Watson, a relic from NXT Season 2, way back in the old days of 2010. A season that spawned the likes of Alex Riley and Titus O'Neil and Eli Cottonwood, remember him? And some guy named Husky Harris. Wonder whatever happened to him. He isn't back to wrestle, though, Percy Watson. Oh, no. As I mentioned last week, he is now back as the third wheel, or the third announcer, maybe I should say, of the NXT announce team. And I think we all have to give it time to see. Maybe he'll build some chemistry with Tom and Corey. But after 1 week, my question remains the same. What exactly was the point of adding this guy to this announce team? Actually, you know, when I look at the teams on Raw and SmackDown and now NXT, it's pretty obvious what's going on here and why these guys are being added. But it's certainly not because of their great announcing skills. How else do you explain David Otunga? Speaking of Showtime, Percy Watson was not the only guy who has gone by the name of Showtime on this show. We had Eric Young. Eric Young teamed up with Alexander Wolf to take on Rich Swann and No Way Jose. Sanity was down a member this week. No Sawyer Fulton. EY had Fulton's jacket, and he ended up throwing it into the aisle. He just threw it on the ground. And so it would appear that Sawyer Fulton is no longer a member of Sanity. He is apparently injured, and he will be out for a while, and so I guess they've decided to write him off. But they may not be down a man for very long. This is a great example, I think, of why guys, like back in the day, and even probably this happens today, I'm sure, but more so back in the day, guys would never admit when they were hurt, or they were very hesitant to take time off. No, I'm not hurt, I'm fine, tape it up and take pills and do this and do that, because they were afraid that somebody would come along and take their spot. And it looks like that's exactly what's happened here. We have Big Damo. Big Damo made his debut appearance on NXT, and he, in this match, came out of the crowd. He shoved No Way Jose into the ring post, and that led to Sanity winning the match. Eric Young with the wheelbarrow neckbreaker to Jose for the win. Sanity looked confused. It wasn't like this was a big ruse or anything like that. They were as confused as anybody by this guy. And Damo went to go pick up the jacket that EY had thrown in the aisle that used to belong to Sawyer Fulton. And he kind of looked at it, and he looked back at Sanity in the ring, and he threw the jacket back down, and he marched to the back. And so it would appear that he may be taking Fulton's place before long as part of this group. He didn't join them on this show, but I think that's the direction that they're going in here. Damo, for those who don't know, has wrestled for a lot of different promotions in and around the UK. I know he's been part of Rev Pro and ICW and Progress, and I think he even wrestled for that What Culture promotion a few months ago. He's a big dude, probably every bit of 300 pounds. 300 pounds plus, and I think he will fit well into Sanity. Honestly, looking at the guy, he probably would fit well into the Wyatt family if they wanted to fast-track him to the main roster. You know, guy looks like a Viking. William Regal announced that the Revival will get their rematch for the tag team titles against DIY on the January 11th episode of NXT. And the winners of that match will go on to defend the tag team titles against the Authors of Pain at the TakeOver show in San Antonio over Royal Rumble weekend. Ty Dillinger, who's been in a war of words on Twitter with The Miz this week, which I have marked down for my Savage Tweet of the Week later on in the podcast. So that's a little bit of a giveaway there. He walked into Regal's office ready to quit. He was ready to hang it up. He said that, look, I said that if I can't beat Samoa Joe, which he did not, maybe I just can't cut it. Maybe I shouldn't be part of the NXT roster anymore. So he was prepared to quit, but before he could do it, Regal said, look, I'm putting together an 8-man tournament to determine a new number one contender for the NXT championship. I want you to be part of it. And Regal then turned around to him and said, now what is it that you wanted to talk to me about? And Dillinger said, never mind. So he is in the tournament. Regal, that is, grabbed a pair of brass knucks that he keeps on display in his office, which I think is a nice little callback to his days with the, remember the power of the punch back in the day? I thought that was a nice little throwback there. So the tournament brackets, by the way, look like this. They've got Dillinger taking on Eric Young. We've got the Drifter taking on Roderick Strong. God help us all if the Drifter beats him. I hope Roddy chops the shit out of that guy. Oney Lorcan against Bobby Roode, who is the obvious pick to win the whole thing, and he's my pick too. And Andrade Cien Almas against No Way Jose. The winners of these four matches will then meet in a fatal four-way to determine the number one contender, I assume at TakeOver. So I see that as being Nakamura and Bobby Roode. Backstage, Nikki Cross from Sanity was seen staring at the NXT Women's Championship, which was just sitting there on a crate, I think. And Asuka showed up. She took the title, and the two of them had a little bit of a stare down before Nikki walked off. It was just last week on the podcast that I floated Asuka and Nikki Cross as a possible title match that I'd like to see, and now we see this. So I'm all for it, if that's the direction they want to go. It's a little weird because Asuka's been kind of heelish. She's been healing it up against her last couple of opponents, and Nikki Cross is just a crazy woman. So I don't know if that'll be the takeover match or not. Maybe it was just a tease and not so much the seed planted for an actual match, but I hope it was. Kimberly of Shimmer and Chikara fame made her debut here in NXT, taking on Ember Moon. I believe Kimberly is signed. I think she is starting up soon at the Performance Center, so we'll be seeing more of her. She got more offense than you would have expected in this match, but Ember Moon finished her off with the twisting stunner off the top, maybe her best one yet for the win. We were then taken to pre-recorded footage from Osaka, Japan, of Samoa Joe defending his NXT championship against Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura got the streamer treatment during his ring introduction. Joe did not. Joe got none, which actually shocked the hell out of me. Normally, even with the heels, he gets some. Like, I've been to plenty of Ring of Honor shows where both guys get the streamers, and Joe didn't get any. So the match was not that long. The match was only about 10 or 11 minutes. I don't know how long the match was live. I would imagine it was probably longer, and they edited it down to fit into TV time here. But it was good. I mean, what I saw was good, but it just did not have that like big match main event feel. I actually thought it was the worst of all the TV matches that Nakamura and Joe have had, of the two or three, or however many it's been. I thought this was the weakest one. This was just, it was missing something, and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the length, I don't know if it was the lack of near falls at the end. I don't think Joe even attempted to go for the Muscle Buster, and the Muscle Buster is the move that he used to actually win back the championship. You would think they would play off of that, and unless I missed a spot here somewhere, they didn't even do that. Nakamura got him up on his shoulders near the finish, but, you know, Joe's a big boy, and Nakamura was tired, and so he dropped him, and Joe took a tumble to the outside, but in the end, Nakamura nailed him with a knee to the back of the head, and then he hit him with the Kinshasa to win his second NXT championship, becoming only the second man in history behind Joe to become a two-time NXT champion. Nakamura wins the title here in his home country. But I have to say, you know, I was left a little bit disappointed when this whole thing was over. Now, right after, they had breaking news, which is that we are going to get the rematch. There's going to be another one. It's going to be Joe getting his rematch against Nakamura. It's going to air on TV this Wednesday. It will be in a steel cage. So this should be the blow-off once and for all. The match has already been taped. If you don't know the result, I won't say it, but they taped the match a few days ago in Melbourne, Australia, and so they're going to air that match, I guess, in full on TV coming up this Wednesday. If you want spoilers, you can find them on plenty of other websites. But I do like when they do these sorts of things. I like it when they go on the road. I like it when they go overseas. I think it's really cool to get out of Full Sail, even if it's just pre-recorded footage of one match. Let's go to Osaka. Let's go to Melbourne. I think that's really cool, and I'd like to see them do more of that. But I just expected more out of this match and the crowd and the atmosphere, and it just wasn't, I don't know. I think back to the Beast in the East when they did Finn Balor and Kevin Owens from one of the buildings there in Japan. And that just felt, I don't know, it just felt like a much bigger deal. Now that was a special event. That wasn't just an episode of NXT. But that felt, the crowd, the atmosphere, the match itself was awesome. That's what I kind of expected this to be, and this fell short of that. It was just missing that little something extra, I thought. So before we get to our Lucha Underground review for the week, this might be a good time to go ahead and grab the old crate. I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast here that the fine folks over at Wrestle Crate UK sent me a complimentary crate of goodies, which I have yet to open. I have resisted the urge. This came on Thursday. It's been sitting here taped and sealed for the last few days. I've been staring at it ever since, here in the corner of the room. So I've been resisting so I could do this live here on the show. I figure it'll be more fun that way, since I have absolutely no idea what's inside. I don't know if it's just stuff from the UK, if there's WWE stuff. I have no idea. This is all new to me, so I have no idea. So let me just grab this here. I'm going to pause so I can grab the box and actually bring it over, and then we'll get the party started here. Okay, I'm back. So, I have the crate here in front of me, as you can hear. You can't see it, but hopefully you can hear it. So the tape has been severed. I'm opening the box. And we've got... Oh, look at this. This is nice. So I want to count how many we got here. I see a pair of sunglasses. There's a shirt. There's a little WWE vinyl figures. I guess these are like those Funkos, I think they're called. So there is, in fact, some WWE stuff in here. There's a bunch of items in here, actually. So the shirt, which is in plastic, I'm not going to take it out of the plastic, but this looks like a... oh, this is a Seth Rollins shirt. It says, The Architect. Ah! My favorite nickname, as many of you know. The Architect. Now, this is cool. This is actually my size, too. So this is perfect. Could wear that to the gym. People ask me, so you're an architect? And I'll be like, sure am. So the... sunglasses, which are also in plastic. This says, oh, this is cool. It says, chew bubblegum, and then on the other side it says, and kick ass. So these are from They Live. We got Roddy Piper They Live sunglasses here, which is very cool. I'll throw those over there. We've got a pin. Now, this is interesting. I've never seen this before. This is the big gold belt, and it looks like a pin. It is the main plate of the Ric Flair Big Gold Belt, the World Heavyweight Championship. It's like a brass pin. That's very cool. Put that over there. We've got a little... Okay, so this is a little... You've seen those, the kind of the laser pointers. That's basically what this is. This is like a little laser pointer. It says Progress Wrestling. And if I shine it at the wall... Oh, that's awesome. Look at that. It's the Progress logo. You know what would be awesome with this? Take this to a WWE show. Get yourself in the front row or in the aisle. And like when somebody walks by, if they stop, flash that shit on their chest. It'll piss off Kevin Dunn. You'll get a Progress logo. It looks like a Progress tattoo on their chest. So that's cool. Maybe I'll take that with me. I'm going to go to my first Progress show the Friday before WrestleMania. I'm very excited about that. And we have the... box with the vinyl figures. I'm going to pause here because I don't want you people to have to just listen to me opening a box. So let me open this up first, and then we'll be back and we'll find out which one is inside. All right, so I got the box open. There was actually another black kind of little package inside with the figure in it, and I got Sting. So I got myself a little Sting vinyl figure. This is Sting back in the day, the long shoulder-length hair, the crow makeup. I'm going to put him right there on my desk. So now we're getting to the bottom of the crate here. We've got a little magazine here, Calling Spots Magazine. It's cool. Check that out after. We got two DVDs. We've got Chikara UK Tour 2016, Best Of. You see some of the matches here. We've got Drew Gulak, who's now a WWE full-time star, taking on Officer Warren Barksdale. Not quite sure who that is. Why he would want to wrestle a lawman. Fire Ant, Ophidian, Heidi Lovelace. I've heard Heidi Lovelace's name mentioned as possibly coming into WWE. I don't know if that's a done deal or not. So we got that, and we've got Ring of Honor Global Wars from May 15, 2015. And look at this. Look who's on the cover. We've got AJ Styles with the IWGP Championship. We've got the Bullet Club is on here. Anderson and Gallows. We've got, oh, look at this. Cedric Alexander's on the show. Hiroshi Tanahashi against Michael Elgin. Jay Lethal against Tetsuya Naito. And, no, a lot of good matches on here. Have to check that out. So that's cool. And now we get to the bottom. And we've got a bunch of photos. Oh, this is very nice. We've got a signed photo of Zack Sabre Jr. Let me take this box. Throw it on the floor. We've got a signed photo, like an illustration, very well done, of Rob Van Dam. For some reason, it's got the signature RD. I guess he was too lazy to put the V in there, or he was doing something else. We've got a picture of Sting. Remember JBL on Raw? That's not Sting, that's a picture of Sting. Well, now I have a literal picture of Sting, although it's not signed. And we've got a picture of Rey Mysterio. These are all, it's like cardboard. This is pretty hard. Oh, we got a picture of Shinsuke Nakamura, King of Strong Style. This was from the Rev Pro show in June of last year from York Hall in London, so that's a candid shot. And now we've got a shot of AJ Styles with the IWGP title holding up the Bullet Club gloves. And then we have a picture of Will Ospreay here at the end. So that was cool. A lot of very varied items here in this box. Some WWE stuff, some UK stuff. Got some signed photos. I've got my little Sting vinyl figure that I'll put on display. And I've got my Seth Rollins shirt. So that was cool. I want to thank the fine folks over at WrestleCrate UK for sending one of these things on over to me. WrestleCrate.co.uk is the place to go if you want to sign up for their service. You get a new mystery box delivered to your doorstep every single month, so check them out. Lucha Underground, let's get into that now. The latest installment of Get That Man a Locksmith, and Helico bursts into Dario Cueto's office. I'm telling you, the guy needs a lock on that door. He comes in to demand a match with Johnny Mundo. And Dario says, I can't do that because Mundo has gotten a lawyer and a restraining order against you. And then Helico says, yeah, well, maybe I'll get a lawyer. Maybe I'll lawyer up too because I've now been beaten unconscious two different times here in your temple. And nothing says underground like threatening legal action against your boss. So Dario says, I'll tell you what. I'll put you in this new tournament that I've created called the Battle of the Bulls, with the winner getting a shot at Johnny Mundo and his Lucha Underground Championship. And Angelico says, all right, after I win the Battle of the Bulls, Mundo won't need a lawyer. He'll need an Undertaker. Undertaker to Lucha Underground. Confirmed. It's actually funny because, you know, the Undertaker's character would fit in perfectly on this show. You know, all that stuff about stealing souls and shit. He'd fit right in here. Tejano, Joey Ryan, Dr. Wagner Jr., and they call him Cage in a Battle of the Bulls tournament match. All action from start to finish. This is the match I was referring to earlier when I was talking about 205 Live. And I saw this match and I thought to myself, this is the kind of action. This is the kind of match they should be opening that show with. This is the kind of stuff that we should be seeing on that show. We got that here. This is what that show should be. So Tejano flattens Joey Ryan with his sit-out powerbomb. Cage steals the pin, wins the match. Two of them, by the way, they're still locked in that best-of-five series. I think Cage, they said, is up maybe 2-1. I honestly forgot it was even still going on. Back in his office, Dario Cueto is sitting with Sexy Star. He is lavishing her with praise. Says, I like you. I agree. Your title was taken from you. Tonight, I will give you a unique opportunity. He says that she will wrestle PJ Black, the lone member of the Worldwide Underground, who she has yet to wrestle. She has wrestled the others, but not him. They will have a match, and if she wins, she will get her rematch with Johnny Mundo for the Lucha Underground Championship inside a steel cage. But if she loses tonight, she will never again get a shot at the Lucha Underground title. Let's go, PJ Black. Elsewhere, we have Officer Reyes, a.k.a. Cortez Castro. He was outed as a rat to Dario and then had his arm broken by Pentagon. He tells his captain that his cover's been blown. Dario knows he's a cop. And the captain says, I don't trust Joey Ryan. I never trusted him, but I trust you. And so I need you back inside that temple. And she just so happens to have a lucha mask in her desk drawer. Which is very convenient, and so, you know, I think no police captain should ever be without one. And she says that he will return to the temple going even deeper, undercover, under a mask. Sexy Star and PJ Black. This was one of the better Sexy Star matches I've seen recently. This was good. Jack Evans came down, he threw a bat into the ring, which distracted the referee. The referee went to retrieve the bat, and in doing so, Evans was holding Sexy Star, and PJ threw a kick, and she ducked, and he kicked Jack instead, and she gave him a sunset flip roll-up for the pin, but it was kind of like semi-botched. I don't know whose fault that was, but it looked very, wonky. So Sexy is going to get her rematch with Johnny Mundo in the cage for the title. We got a Cobra Moon vignette of her sitting on a throne somewhere, talking about the history of her tribe and some generals who betrayed them, and somehow Drago plays into all this, and she wants them to bring him to her. I don't know who these two people were. They were kind of kneeling before her, and She says, I want you to bring him to me. And if it sounds confusing to you, it's because it was. I found this very confusing. Dario goes to Matanza's cage, his lair, to see if he wants to be part of his Battle of the Bulls tournament. Matanza, who only wants Rey Mysterio, he does not give a shit about any of this other stuff, or the title, or anything, and he kind of reaches through the bars in a very, like, you know, he reaches through, he puts his hand around his brother's head, he's kind of like stroking his hair, and you knew what was coming. He grabs his brother's head, his face, and smashes it forward into the steel bars, knocks him out. And then he notices the key to the cage is sitting on the floor, so he's struggling and he's reaching and he's reaching, and they cut away. So we don't know if he actually escaped or not. Main event was the Mac, Marty the Moth, Dragon Azteca Jr., and Mil Muertes. I'm trying to say it the way that that they say, right? It's Dragon Azteca Jr. and Mil Muertes. Like he's, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner. He's, anyway. Battle of the Bulls tournament match. Muertes and Katrina, to me, still one of the best entrances in all of wrestling. I wish they would release his theme song. I was kind of looking it up. I'm like, I went on YouTube, and I can't find this guy's theme. I cannot find Mil Muertes' theme song. You really can't find very many Lucha Underground songs at all. And I'm looking it up, and apparently I see Hans Zimmer's name is connected to, I don't know if he scored it, or if it's his company, or his studio. I mean, Hans Zimmer is a big name. I mean, he's had a hand in a bunch of just great soundtracks. Go back and listen to the soundtrack for the movie Inception. I mean, he does great stuff. So that's some heavy-duty shit, but you can't find the music anywhere. So Matanza made his way out in the middle of this match. He immediately went after Dragon Azteca. He powerbombed him onto Mil Muertes. Really cool Wrath of the Gods to Dragon Azteca that you gotta go see it for yourself. He kind of caught him in midair and then spun him around for it. Just really athletic stuff. I guess there's a reason why they call this guy Mr. Athletic Jeff Cobb when he's not wrestling for Lucha Underground. So Dario came out. He was holding a towel to his face, drenched in blood after what happened earlier. And he tries to calm down Matanza. He leads him to the back. And the Mac hits a running stunner on Marty the Moth. Gets the pin to win the match. A big win for the Mac. So he and Cage have now advanced in the Battle of the Bulls tournament. And that was the show. So overall, a good show. We had good action in the 2-4-way matches. We had some story advancement. We had, every time we get to see Dario, we had plenty of him on this show. That's a plus, so I enjoyed it. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We are going to start with, Alok from India. Who do you think has been the MVP of SmackDown this year, AJ Styles or The Miz? I know AJ is a far superior wrestler, but hasn't Miz played a significant role in the rise of SmackDown over Raw? Styles and Kevin Owens are supposed to be heels, but often get positive or mixed reactions, whereas The Miz is universally hated. What do you think? I think Miz is a great heel. I said that earlier in the show. I think him and Charlotte are at the top of the heap in the company right now, but being the MVP of the brand is about more than just who the better bad guy is, right? AJ is the MVP, to me, without question. Not only of SmackDown, but I think of the entire roster on either brand. He's just incapable of having a bad match. His promos have gotten better. Because when AJ came in, I don't know that he was known for his great mic work, right? But he's improved on that. Everyone he's in the ring with, he makes them better. Even the ones who are already good and don't need his help. He goes out there, they have great matches. Just ask yourself, like, if you were building your own roster right now, you could only pick one of these guys to build around. Of these two, would you pick AJ Styles, or would you pick The Miz? If it were me, it would be AJ. Flav from Romania. If Samoa Joe receives a call-up to the main roster and does not fight for the title, I think the next best idea is for him to win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania. It would be perfect for him, and would bring some validity to a match that others could not. What are your thoughts? I'd be okay with that. I mean, look, he doesn't even have to. You say if he doesn't come up and win a title, I'm not expecting him to come to the main roster and win a championship. I don't think he has to do that. I think you just put him in the Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble, to me, is the most obvious place for him. You know, AJ Styles made his debut in the Royal Rumble this year, and I think he's followed up with a pretty good year. You know, when he first, look, there were people freaking out. You know, he didn't win the Rumble. oh my God, he lost to Chris Jericho at WrestleMania, which was a puzzling move at the time. But things worked out in the end for him. So for Samoa Joe to make his debut in the Rumble, even if he doesn't win the whole thing, which he would not, I shouldn't say that. I mean, maybe he would. Who knows, right? Maybe he would win and it would be a big surprise. I wouldn't expect it, though. But he could debut in the Rumble and not fight for the championship on day one and still go on to have a pretty damn good year. I mean, look, a year from now, we could be looking at Samoa Joe as the champion on SmackDown or the champion on Raw. So you never know. I would put him in the Rumble. Envy from Houston. Was Alberto Del Rio leaving Lucha Underground a big mistake? I felt like him leaving for WWE was a giant mistake. He was treated really well in Lucha Underground, like a big deal. He put on some great matches with Tejano and added so much to the show in star power, but when he went to WWE, he went downhill so fast I forgot he was ever even with the company. The only memory I have, or I had of him, was when AJ Styles mocked him for not being in the main event. Do you think he would have had a better career if he had stayed in Lucha Underground? Well, my understanding is he got a really sweet deal to go back to WWE. I take that to mean more money than what he was making before. So was it a mistake? I mean, in hindsight, maybe it was. I guess seeing as how he's not in the company anymore, he didn't last very long. But at the time, he made the right call. He made the call he had to make, right? Look, it's a business. You're in business to make money. I know that doesn't really explain the last 15 years of TNA, but it's true. If I'm a wrestler, I go where I can make the most money and I can maximize my exposure. That will always be WWE. In terms of exposure, I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than that. Now, to some people, that may not be important. But I think he had a great thing going with Lucha Underground, because it wasn't just Lucha Underground. He was working for AAA. He was doing dates for Ring of Honor, which some people may forget. I mean, he had a certain level of freedom that you don't get when you work for WWE. You can't just go work wherever you want. When you are in WWE, you are theirs. You belong to them. They own you. You know, for a while there, he was one of the hottest acts in wrestling. Alberto Del Rio was one of the hottest, most sought-after acts in all of wrestling. Everyone wanted to book this guy. He was wrestling for a lot of different promotions. This guy, he was burning the candle at both ends. Now, how long would that have lasted? Eventually, that buzz wears off. That wasn't going to last forever. Putting him with Zeb Coulter when he came into WWE was one of the most idiotic things I have ever seen. Because he came in, he actually had momentum even in WWE. When he came in that first night, he beat John Cena. He won the US title. The people were cheering him like a babyface. He had this shredded, ripped physique. He was like a new man. He looked motivated. He looked physically different. He was different than the last time we saw him in WWE, and the people that followed his career, you know, on the indies and all that kind of stuff, they already knew, hey, this guy, he's kind of in demand, he's a big deal now, he came from Lucha Underground, and they could have taken that, and they could have probably done something with it, but they put him with Zeb Coulter, and then he just faded away. And that didn't last long, but by the time they realized they had made a mistake, it was like, eh. The bloom was already off the rose at that point. They had a chance to do something with this guy. He beat John Cena night one, and then they did nothing. It's like, what are you doing? You know, this guy is having the hottest run of his career. What are you doing? You're paying him a lot of money, right? They pay Goldberg a lot of money, I'm sure. So what do? They had him squash Brock in a minute and a half because they know we're paying this guy. We better make sure that we're maximizing our return on him. Let's make him out to be a big deal. Brock Lesnar, he gets paid a shitload of money. You know, I don't hear very many people talking about, oh, they're mishandling Brock Lesnar. No, he's one of the few people they will never mishandle because they're paying him so much money. It doesn't make any sense to pay him millions of dollars and then go ahead and fuck him up. I'm not saying Del Rio was making Brock money, but again, he was making pretty good money, I'm sure. That's why he came over. I don't know why you would squander a guy like that. Guy had real buzz. He had real momentum. But in WWE, he bored me to tears. Absolutely bored me to tears. In Lucha Underground, he did feel special. You're right about that. And the funny thing is, you know, where things supposedly fell apart between him and Lucha Underground and the main reason he left, or this was the story anyway, it was creative. I guess he was very upset, like he wasn't being positioned in the main event of Ultima Lucha and his placement on the card. He just wasn't happy. This isn't what we agreed to. whatever it was. Well, it's funny if that's true because it was a creative thing. Well, compare that to what WWE did with him a few months later with the Coulter stuff and then the League of Nations stuff. He was hardly in the main event, right? So I wonder if he looked at that and said, shit, maybe I did make a mistake. You know, all of a sudden Lucha Underground doesn't look so bad. But he made his money and he got out of there. You can't fault the guy for that. Antonio, one of the things that has been annoying me a lot these past couple of months is how Stephanie McMahon and Lita take the credit for starting the Divas Revolution when it was AJ Lee who fought for it. She even called Stephanie out on Twitter. I think that was about pay, I think, and stuff like that. Called her out on Twitter when nobody in the company gave a damn about this division. I don't know that I would say that. I mean, my understanding is there have always been people fighting for the women backstage. It's just that until recently, they just didn't win out, right? Their voices really just weren't being heard. I think there have always been people, even Fit Finlay. I mean, Fit Finlay worked with the women going back a number of years, and I'm sure Fit Finlay is probably looking at this now, and he's smiling because he was always very much involved with the women and training them and helping them and giving them guidance and trying to get them to that next level. So I wouldn't say that nobody in the company cared. I would say the person or people who mattered at the top, they didn't care. I think that much is pretty obvious. But anyway, he goes on to say here, would AJ Lee be more respected by WWE and the many fans that call her overrated if she was not married to CM Punk? I'll tell you what, AJ would still be in the company if she wasn't married to CM Punk. I believe that. So yes, I think she would be getting a lot more credit than she does. She was very outspoken on social media at the time about things that Stephanie McMahon had said. This might have been just after she left. I honestly don't remember now if it was near the end of her run or if it was right after she left. I think she was still with the company when she made those comments. Because it was something Stephanie tweeted about women or equal pay or something, equal rights, and she just went on this rant. And I could not have been part of a storyline because it was the sort of thing that WWE would not have been happy, I would imagine, with her tweeting about, because it could have blown up into a much bigger media story. So I think she was still with the company at the time. But yeah, she was very outspoken about stuff like that. The scathing promo, one of the most memorable Diva promos I've ever seen, was her cutting that promo on the Total Divas cast. You know, when the Bellas and Natalya and everybody was out at ringside and AJ's got the championship, she's standing up on stage. It was like her little pipe bomb, they called it. And she just roasted them. That was when the Bellas were just squealing in the background at ringside and wouldn't shut the hell up, just yakking their way through the whole promo. But I definitely think that AJ deserves some credit, I think, for this renewed focus on the women. I wouldn't say she deserves the lion's share of the credit, but she was kind of the first woman in the last 5 or 6 years that really felt like a big deal. You know, Charlotte's kind of taking that mantle now. She feels like a main event player on Raw, the way they're booking her. Two Raws in a row now she's headlined. But AJ Lee was the first one in a very long time. I mean, I don't know if you could say going back to the days of Miss Elizabeth, but I mean, yeah, Trish and Lita. You had women who headlined and you had women who were kind of big deals on the show. But in the modern era, AJ Lee was the first one to really break out, and she was part of all these different storylines. And yeah, I mean, look, she would be, I believe that she would be right in the middle of things right now on either brand had she not left. Once she married Punk, I mean, look, as acrimonious as things were between Punk and the company, and then the lawsuit didn't help, it was just awkward. It's like you knew her days were numbered. She wasn't going to be there for much longer. You couldn't sustain that type of awkward relationship. And then once they countersued her husband, she was gone. You knew she wasn't going to be there much longer. It's like Paige now. There's talk about Paige coming back. I do think Paige will eventually be back, but I don't think she's long for this company. I really don't. It's just a weird situation there, and it's very awkward, and there's a lot of issues there. And now she's got the one strike left, and if she fails another test, she's fired. So I think she'll be back on TV at some point, but I don't know that she's going to be back for very long. It's kind of a similar type of situation, I think, but not nearly as acrimonious as the Punk thing. I mean, even if you saw that TMZ video the other day, they had Del Rio and Paige. They were talking about Trump and Linda McMahon becoming part of Trump's cabinet. And they said, well, what do you think if it were Vince McMahon? And Del Rio actually said, I like Vince. I just had issues with, and he muttered something that I couldn't understand. It almost sounded like his son-in-law maybe. But so I don't think there's like hatred there the way there is clearly this hatred when it comes to Punk. And there was just no way that AJ could stick around. But I do wonder, you know, had she stayed, if they would have let AJ Styles keep his name when he came in. I wonder. It's very possible we would have AJ Lee on one brand right now, and we'd have like Alan Jones on the other roster or something like that. Because they would do that. They would do that sort of thing. I mean, we've seen them do this before. I mean, I still remember reading about how they changed Steve Regal's name to William Regal because Vince, I guess it was Vince, said that we have too many Steves. People are going to be confused. It's like, you had Steve Austin, you had, what, Steve Blackman. What, are we idiots? I think we could tell these people apart. No, you're William Regal now. It's like, okay, whatever. I would not put it past them to do that. John from California. Since 2003, who has been the best United States champion in WWE? And also, what is your favorite WWE United States Championship match that you would recommend we all go out and watch? Best United States champion since 2003. Well, honestly, I probably would go with John Cena. No joke. I really enjoyed the open challenge gimmick that he did last year. We got a ton of great matches out of it. I think he did a hell of a lot more than Roman Reigns is, for example, in terms of elevating. And it's not Roman's fault. I mean, if they booked Roman as this defending U.S. champion who, you know, defended against all comers and they could do a better job than they are of making that title feel special. They're not doing shit with it right now. I mean, he and Jericho did have a really good match on Monday, I will say that. But those have been few and far between. It has been a far cry from what we got with Cena last year. Cena, being the name that he is, and doing the open challenge and inviting anybody and everybody to come challenge him for the title. I mean, that really did, I thought it elevated the title. And gave it some more prestige to the point where I was looking forward to seeing U.S. title matches on TV every week, more so than probably even the WWE title. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know that it should overshadow your bigger championship. But I enjoyed it. I really did. I enjoyed, you know, the matches he had with Neville, with Cesaro. They had some great matches. Match with Dean Ambrose. And it's not like that was Cena's only run with the belt. You know, Cena had the championship, I think, a bunch of times when he was on SmackDown in 03. He was still doing, he was still battle rapping. So he has a long history with that title. I think I would probably go with John Cena. Now, as far as best match, there's three that come to mind. When I saw this question, I came up with two right away, and then I was reminded of a third one. But there's three that I would recommend. You can pick any of the three that you like or go watch them all. They're probably all on the network. The first one is the match, which I had almost forgotten about, between Benoit and Eddie Guerrero at Vengeance in 2003, which was a really good show. That was actually a great show. They had a great triple threat on that show with Brock and Angle and Big Show. Some good stuff on that pay-per-view. But they opened the show with Eddie and Chris for the U.S. title. And they had a great match. Surprise! I know, Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero had a great match. Another match that some people may forget is a triple, and this is the one that I wanted to mention first, but I'll mention it now, is from 2010. There was a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view in 2010. There was a triple threat match for the U.S. title. I'm pretty sure, was it Hell in a Cell? I think it was Hell in a Cell. It was Hell in a Cell or Night of Champions. It was one of those shows in the fall of 2010, and it was Daniel Bryan, John Morrison, and The Miz. Go watch that. That was a really good match. And the third one that I would mention is from last year. I think the John Cena-Seth Rollins match at SummerSlam was an outstanding match with a really bad finish. It was a great match marred by a horrible finish. That was where John Stewart turned on Cena. That was the whole champion against champion where both belts were on the line. And Rollins, I think Rollins won the U.S. title that night. That was a great match. So you can't go wrong with any of those three. If you've never seen them, or if you haven't seen them in a while, go back and watch them. I think those are three of the best that they've had. Now, we're talking about since WWE kind of took over the U.S. title. We're not going into the history going back to the 70s and the 80s. If this was a more open-ended question about greatest U.S. title matches of all time, now you're getting into like Magnum T.A. and Tully Blanchard and The Cage and Flair and Sting and Luger and Dusty and all these different people. And I don't even know that any of the matches I just mentioned would even make the top five, as great as they are. But we're just talking WWE here. Anthony from Mexico: if WWE ever took the Boogeyman character seriously, how far do you think it would have gone? I think the best he could have been is Intercontinental or U.S. Champion. What do you think? Boogeyman didn't need a title. Boogeyman's like he's like the Undertaker. You know, he doesn't need a championship. But the thing with the Boogeyman is, he sucked. Like, as a wrestler, he was terrible. He was exactly where he should have been. He didn't wrestle a lot. I never saw him wrestle a long match, thank God. I mean, I know he had a WrestleMania match once with Booker. I think Booker might have been hurt, so it was like an easy thing to have Booker T do. You will never find someone who said, man, I remember that great Boogeyman match. It's because they don't exist. But what he was known for, where they would bring him in for the skits and eating the worms, he was a character. That's what he was. That's what he was good at. And so I think they had him exactly where he should have been. Now, they could have made him out to be super scary, and maybe he would have had a great entrance, but an entrance is all that he would have been. Because once the bell rang, it would have been all downhill from there. So I don't think he would have gone much further than he did. Derek from Winnipeg has a question about water. Yes, this is a unique question. He says, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart battle it out for over an hour at WrestleMania, yet they not once are seen hydrating during the match. How dehydrated are these guys after a long match like that? You can honestly see Bret Hart foaming at the mouth as he walks back to the ring when the match is ordered to continue. Every sport imaginable permits its players to hydrate somewhat, periodically, throughout the event. For example, UFC fighters, they go at it for 15 minutes at 5-minute intervals with a chance to hydrate each time. Wrestling might be less intense, but these guys have been known to go 4 times as long with 4 times less water. That is simply fucked. What are your thoughts on this? Is this something that wrestlers complain about? Surprisingly, I have never seen a shoot interview where a wrestler brings this up. I have never seen a shoot interview myself where guys are shooting on water. I've never seen that before. And honestly, it's not something I've ever really thought about. Although I suppose you do have a point. I do find it funny. I guess it's something that's like frowned upon for some reason. I guess, I don't know, it makes you less of a man, some stupid shit like that. Because I vaguely remember R-Truth. And this would have been back when he was doing his heel run, so we're going back to like 2010, 2011. I vaguely remember a time on Raw where he got caught on camera. It was either during a match or he was in between matches. He was like crouched in the corner, and I remember him, he got like a water break. He asked for a water bottle. They caught him on camera drinking. And people made such a big deal about this, and there were people making fun of him for it. And yet, I laugh because The Rock will come back to TV and he's been caught on camera, I'm pretty sure more than once, asking for water during a promo. He'll be out there cutting a promo, someone's music hits, he immediately turns to like reach for a bottle of water, like, let me get some water. There's nothing wrong with that, but what makes that so different than R-Truth after a friggin' match wanting a drink of water? I don't see what the big deal is. The Rock could drink during a promo, but it's not okay for a guy to grab a quick water break during a match. I always thought that was pretty stupid. Brian from Orlando: what makes Jake the Snake Roberts one of the greatest promos of all time? And do you see his style and mannerisms being used at all today? Also, can you explain the story of the feud with Rick Martel and why he was wearing glasses for their feud? Jake had a promo style that was unique to him. He didn't have to yell. He didn't have to holler. He didn't have to scream, rant and rave. It just worked. He spoke softly. He made you listen. I think Jericho, I don't know if he's admitted it, but I think Jericho borrowed a lot from Jake when it came to his heel run in 2008. I know the whole character was following more of the bad guy from, No Country for Old Men. But I think in terms of the promo style, the low talking, making people have to work extra hard to listen to what you're saying, he got that from Jake. That was a Jake Roberts thing. And his character, I mean, it was creepy. It was dark. He knew the character very well. It just worked. It worked for him. I see a lot of his style and his mannerisms in Bray Wyatt today. I would say Wyatt is the closest thing I could think of. You know, the creepy dialogue, the low talking. Sometimes so low I can't even hear what he's saying. But he would be the closest one. As far as the feud with Martel, basically what happened is it started on an episode of the Brother Love Show. They were on the Brother Love Show. I don't remember if they were on together for some reason or if Jake was on and Martel just for whatever reason kind of wandered onto the set. That I don't remember. I'm sure somebody can help fill you in on that. But they were on the Brother Love Show. Martel was there. I think he kept spraying his arrogance bottle. Or what do they call those things? Not a bottle. Atomizer. He was spraying the atomizer. Which, by the way, the Arrogance Atomizer, if you saw, popped up on Lucha Underground a few weeks ago. I thought that was cool. He kept spraying it at the bag with the snake in it. And Jake, I guess, had told him to stop, and he wouldn't stop. And so when he did it again, Jake went to go after him, and he got sprayed in the eyes. And they played it up like he had been blinded. So for weeks after that, Jake walked out with sunglasses on like a blind man. And they had him wear a white contact lens, because when the glasses once got knocked off, they zoomed in and they saw like one eye was all white, like his eyeball was missing. And it looked really freaky and stuff. And when you're a kid, it looks freaky and it kind of looks cool. Now it just looks ridiculous. But, you know, I watched that blindfold match. I'm actually glad I got this question because I watched that blindfold match they had at WrestleMania not that long ago. I think I was on a WrestleMania kick a few months ago and I watched WrestleMania 6, 7, and 8. And I watched that WrestleMania. And I never noticed this before until the last time I watched it. But if you pay attention at the very beginning of the match, when the referee is putting the sack, the giant blindfold over their heads. Now, mind you, him and Martel are not supposed to be able to see through these things, right? They're going to be blind. We're going to put the sack over your head. You're not going to be able to see anything. You're going to have to feel around for your opponent. That was the whole premise of the match. So the referee puts this bag over his head. But Jake, I don't know if he just didn't realize he, you know, was on camera or he didn't know that you'd be able to see through it, but he took his hand and he stuck his hand to adjust something up into the bag, into the sack, and you can see his hand through the bag. It's like, wait a minute. Yeah, you know, there was like a little area with netting in the sack and was clearly see through and you could see his hand. So it's like, oops. I enjoyed that match. I have to say, like, for what it was, I thought it was well done. Jake, look, he had the people. He would point in the direction of Martel, and the people were just, like, totally into it. It was something to see. It was different, that was for sure. We've seen some blindfold matches since then. I think they've done it a few times since then, and none have been as good. But this one was actually pretty good. Wyrad from Orlando, buy or sell, peak WWF Hogan or peak NWO Hogan? Peak WWF Hogan. I'm buying on that. Peak WWF Hogan is what helped put that company on the map and made me a wrestling fan. I'm going to buy on that. Without peak WWF Hogan, you don't have NWO Hogan. It's a very simple thing. Nathan from York, Pennsylvania. We'll end with this. Buy or sell on the bigger surprise, AJ Styles' run in 2016 or Chris Jericho's run in 2016. You know, I got one of these a couple weeks ago. Actually, one of the better buyer sells I've gotten recently, which is, who do you buy on the better? I don't know if it was either the better character or like the bigger... I forgot exactly how it was phrased, but it was between Jericho and Matt Hardy. And that's a hard one, because they both had great years, but I went with Matt Hardy. Not to take anything away from Jericho. And I'm going to do the same thing here. I'm going to go with the other guy. I'm going to buy on AJ and his run, and I'm going to sell on Jericho, but not because Jericho hasn't had a pretty damn good run this year. But if you would have told me a year ago that AJ Styles would not only come to WWE, just him coming into WWE and signing with them when it didn't look like they had any interest in signing him. Remember all the stories from last year? They made an offer, but it was a low ball offer. It's like, this guy's not coming in. If they wanted him, they would have him. And then they made the deal, and they signed him. And that's surprising enough, but for him to then bypass the NXT roster, which almost nobody else did, go right to the main roster. If you would have told me then that he would be champion a few months later, and would have 3 wins over John Cena, I never would have believed it. Especially as a TNA guy. Forget the fact that he's almost 40. And his body's all beaten up. He's a TNA guy. He's one of those TNA originals. And I just look at what he's done this year, and he's had a remarkable run. So I got to buy on Styles. I'm going to sell on Jericho. But at the same time, you know, if you would have told me a year ago, 6 months ago, that Chris Jericho would get a plant, a scarf, and a list over, that's also pretty impressive. I think that he deserves some credit for that. I can't take anything away from that. But the push that AJ's gotten was just a huge surprise. I think it's probably the biggest surprise of the year. And lastly here, we are going to do Savage Tweet of the Week instead of Sad Tweet. We have a Savage Tweet. It goes to The Miz. He was engaged in a war of words on Twitter with Ty Dillinger of NXT, who of course refers to himself as the Perfect 10. And Dillinger said to him, "Don't worry, Mizzy, if the opportunity arises, I'll make it quick." To which Miz responded, "Does Perfect 10 stand for the 10 years that you've been in developmental? I mean, how long do I have to wait?" I do believe that is what all the cool kids call a mic drop right there. Ouch. That is your Savage Tweet of the Week. The Miz is killing it. He's been killing it lately. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can forward or send questions if you want to on Twitter. I may or may not be able to answer them for you on Twitter. @solemonster is my handle on there. Don't forget to go back and check out my Sound Off Extra review of TLC from last weekend. I think it's like 35 minutes. You can get the full video up there on our YouTube channel, and please subscribe when you go there. We have our new shirt up in the store. Of course, you can make a PayPal donation on thesolemonster.com. Lots of different ways to get this show in terms of iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher. We have our own free app. You could stream it in if you are an Android user on your device. You can go in the Google Play Store and download our app. But Stitcher and iTunes, if you want to leave us some love, you could leave us a review. I would very much appreciate that. We are, of course, a 5-star rated podcast, which I'm grateful for. And we will be back with episode 474 next week, and we'll have predictions for Roadblock, End of the Line, another pay-per-view, yet another one. So we'll do that next week as we head towards the end of the year here. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and I will be back with more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster Sounds Off.
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solemonster Sounds Off. Since 2007, The Solemonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster Sound Off.